Was sagt die Vergangenheit? Sie gewinnt Fakt. Wir müssen einen neuen Menschen erziehen.
Was ist uns gelungen? Dem deutschen Volk.
It's finally signed, the armistice. In this wagon in France, on November the 11th, 1918, was led by Democrats.
Emerged a new democratic state, the Weimar Republic.
Everything was going upside down in Germany, and they never experienced a democracy. So I said, now that we have freedom, now we have a democracy, we should have no censorship. Not in the theater, not in literature, and not in the cinema.
With this new anything-goes attitude, Berlin overnight replaced Paris as the center of hedonism.
The end of censorship was quite extraordinary for the whole world. That's why people saw Berlin as the Babylon of the 20s.
Berlin had embraced this extraordinary experiment in permissiveness with total abandon.
Things that have been considered to be immoral, amoral, whatever, became irrelevant, and anything went.
Its very name became synonymous with perversion, debauchery, and creativity. Berlin in the 1920s was the sex capital of Europe.
Falling in love again, never once again.
It looked like a normal downtown area of Central Europe until 5 o'clock, and then everything would begin to change utterly. Places that you hadn't noticed would turn into outrageous strip clubs. The basements of the restaurants would be homosexual or lesbian romper rooms and sex clubs. Berlin was what sexual daydreams wanted to be. You could find almost anything there, and maybe everything.
Berlin was the modern town for women around the world. It was a city that was filled with lesbian life. There was the idea that everywhere you went, you didn't have to hide what you were. You celebrated your life. They called it their Shangri-La by the Spree.
Berlin was the place to take a walk on the wild side. The edge city in the 20s, more than any other place in the world. Unlike France, unlike the United States, Berlin lost. Germany lost in the First World War. With that loss came a revolution that
flocked
swept
into
away
the city to take advantage of the cheapest sex on the continent.
You had tourists coming from all over the world. $10 in American money could buy you anything you wanted.
People were renting out their bodies, people that you wouldn't believe, like generals and their wives that couldn't have been terribly attractive, would engage in public sex in their living room if there was any Japanese, Turks, or Americans who would pay for it, who would pay a dollar for it.
With entire life savings disappearing through hyperinflation and desperate for hard currency, middle-class Berliners transformed their homes into houses of pleasure for tourists.
The Great Depression was in its third year. And Germany had suffered as much as any country.
German mother, your children's father and provider stands before the closed down factories, unemployed, without bread, without the hope that his lot and life will change. German mother, you want a good future and freedom for your children. This is why you will vote on the 13th of March for Adolf Hitler.
It was the 10th of February, 1933.
Sie hören schon eine sich vermehrenden Geräusch, wie die fieberhafte Spannung zu wachsen beginnt.
Although they had never captured more than 37% of the popular vote, the Nazis
were the largest political party in Germany. And so, German leaders installed Hitler as chancellor.
Prices eventually ran out of control. The prices went up so much that people were forced to spend billions of marks for daily items and were dizzied by the amount of zeros involved. As an example, a loaf of bread which cost 250 marks in January 1923 rose to 200,000 million marks in November of 1923. Or a newspaper that was sold for 1 mark in May 1922 had a price tag of 70 million marks in November 1923. It was cheaper to use the back of a 1 million mark to write notes, as a notepad would cost billions of marks. Some had to use wheelbarrows filled with cash to get a cup of coffee. At restaurants, customers had to negotiate the price of the food in advance, as there was a good chance that the price could change before the meal was served. Most restaurants did not print menus, as by the time the food would arrive, the price had already gone up. At some point, the situation got so bad that the prices were doubling almost every 4 days. There is evidence that it was cheaper to burn marks instead of wood or coal. Some used marks instead of wallpaper to decorate their walls. Children also used bundles of marks instead of toy bricks. Workers also had to negotiate their wages almost on a daily basis. Some had to use a scale to count the weight of their money to get its value, as it was difficult to count all the bills. Workers were paid twice a day so they could spend the money quickly before it lost its value. Many collected their wages in suitcases. One person who left his suitcase unattended found that the thief had stolen the suitcase, but not the
devaluation of the currency just by increasing units. If you increase the units of substance, the value per unit goes down. So they've been doing this systematically since 1913, and now we're working on a dollar that's worth 2 cents compared to 1913. And they do it with an understanding, or at least a belief in their hearts, that they can do central economic planning through manipulation of money supply and interest rates. And they can't do it. It's totally impossible. Central economic planning by the Federal Reserve is no more feasible than the central economic planning of the Soviet system, where they controlled everything. Money is one half of everything that we do, every transaction. So when the Fed manipulates that and manipulates the interest rates, they change savings, they change interest rates, they bail out their friends, they encourage deficits, and worst of all, they encourage big government. Because there's some individuals here in Washington that always want to fight every war there is around the world, and they don't have to tax people. They just run up the debt and the Fed prints it. And if you like welfare, they do the same thing. So over these years, until we've gotten into trouble, the conservatives and liberals were close allies in supporting the Fed. But now that the failure of the system has come, right, the Fed is being challenged.
Are you getting it? Armageddon it. Between World War I and World War II, Germany suffered under the yoke of immorality, hyperinflation, political instability, and war. This was the Weimar Republic, a, quote, democracy imposed by the victors of the Great War. Combining wounded national pride with hedonism, economic devastation, and democratism created a chaotic soup that yielded turmoil and collapse. The people who desired liberation soon found themselves desiring nothing more than basic goods and order. Caught between the anarchy of communist agitators and threats of invasion from Western capitalist powers, the people had become conditioned to choose, quote, moderation, a third way, national socialism. Will we fall for the same ploy? History doesn't necessarily repeat, but it sure does echo. We are not Germany. We are not living in the Weimar Republic, but we might be living in Weimarica. Foolish young people are jailed for experimenting with drugs while murderers and rapists are let loose. Parents are disdained when they eschew the indoctrination of their children at overpriced centers of idiocy and conformity while sexual perversion is considered mandatory education. We turn a blind eye to hedonism and libertinism while we label those who defend the Constitution, natural morality, and fiscal responsibility as extremists and terrorists. We encourage public displays of anti-Americanism, homosexualism, anti-Christianity, and Islamic jihadism, while we permit Christians to worship in private so long as they don't make too big a deal out of it. We spend more time planning vacations and shopping for holiday gifts to place around our Festivus pole than we do on concerns about quantitative easing, deficit spending, and debt. We fight amongst ourselves over false left-right politics, conspiratorial distractions, and tear apart statesmen who champion the Constitution for the most minor infractions to our superior political sensibilities, while our blood and treasure is spilled to wage bankers' wars across the globe. We become emotionally charged at the prompting of the corporatist media, our favorite celebrities and professional athletes, while suffering an open invasion across our borders and leaving our veterans at the mercy of an inefficient bureaucracy more concerned with killing innocents overseas for profit than defending our rights and property at home. When we know more about unprovable conspiracies, Hollywood's sexual escapades, and this season's sports championship than we do about our own history, the workings of the central bank, and corporatist manipulations hiding in the shadows, we are doomed to relive Weimar in a brand new, soft, emotive American way. Torn between self-loathing, hatred of country, distrust of neighbor, and fascistic nationalism disguised as patriotism, we are inviting social anarchism, state tyranny, and economic collapse to reign. When, quote, conservatives promote progressivism, and, quote, liberals sponsor socialism, and, quote, libertarians encourage anarchism and or the arrogant exclusivity of secret knowledge, while Christians are far more concerned with their own superiority as they anticipate Armageddon, we are left with atomized individualism, collective psychosis, and insular separation leading to conflict, division, and empowerment of the very same spirit all accuse the others of supporting. Each of us claims patriotism, superiority, and an exclusive monopoly on being right, while the transnational financiers, foreign enemies, and the devil laugh. Pointing fingers at the incompetence and or the malice of the current Congress and executives is not unpatriotic, nor racist, and probably not helpful either. The problem is that they are doing things they aren't supposed to be doing, some effectively, most incompetently, and none legally, while they are doing little to none of the things they should be doing. The same moneyed interests that own the Fed control the government puppets and decide what the media focuses your mind upon. They distract, sow division, obfuscate, abscond, and degrade, and all most of us do is pretend it isn't happening, complain without action, or propose actions that yield no results or results contrary to the intention. Why? Because they've convinced liberals that liberty is handed out by government. They've conned libertarians into thinking free markets are purely organic and efficiently deliver that which we desire without consideration that private vice cannot yield public virtue. And without virtue, one can only have license, not liberty. And they've placated conservatives into thinking that government can solve all problems if it follows the GOP's interpretation of the Bible, while ignoring the Constitution and that the ultimate virtue is militarism. The fact is the liberals, conservatives, and libertarians are all operating on a fascistic model. So those who control the power win no matter what we do, unless we take that which is right and congruent with human nature, properly understood, the natural law, properly understood, and the Constitution, properly understood, and apply those principles practically everywhere we can at all levels. Ah, but you ask, who is to decide what is meant by properly understood? The Constitution is to be understood as it was intended at the time it was written and legally amended for contemporary times through the Article 5 process, which may also involve nullification in certain circumstances. The natural law has been studied in the West for 2,500 years. But somehow in the last 500 years, the so-called modern era, we've decided to substitute the will to power for the objective study and application of the rules of reality, and human nature is self-evident thing. Because we're all human. But we've coddled the lie that somehow we alone can perfect ourselves. Remember what Senator Obama said when he was campaigning? We are the people we've been waiting for. Without these principles, we will fall for the lie of democratism, majoritarianism, the will to power, and the enslaving and disintegrating notions of nurturing vice, just like the Weimar Germans did and countless societies before them. Stop thinking with your genitals, your wallets, your feelings, and your fears, and learn your history, your inheritance of ordered liberty, the natural moral law, and employ the few political tools we have left to thwart the decline into the abyss of irrelevance, dissolution, and chaos. Seek not an earthly savior, but stand up and save each other. You have a choice. You can work hard now to further liberty by having real conservatives and conservative libertarians take over the GOP, or watch the statists in both parties push their corporatist agenda to their benefit and our demise. Now is the last chance to stop those who want to fundamentally transform our republic into an empire abroad and a police state at home. End the destruction of our economy by the Republican-Democrat duopoly and their Keynesian masters at the Federal Reserve by standing with the real conservatives to defeat the lawless hordes of cultural Marxists, national socialists, the statists, collectivists, oligarchs, useful idiots, and their fellow travelers, especially the Democrat socialists. First, you must crush the rhinos for liberty. You are live on Liberty's Thunder with Rex and Trog, irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Baron Rex von Freiheit, broadcasting to you from Berlin, D.C., the Imperial City. Herr Doctor?
Doctor. You know, that was a pretty brilliant opening. That should be published and spread around the Internet. I think about a little bit of everything that you said because my brain, you know, connects dots to historical events and things like that. But, you know, there was, right now the Bilderberg conference is going on and everybody's, you know, all over the Internet. And then Obama just traded like five of the most insane, deadly Taliban for a guy that is questionable whether he was captured or joined the enemy. I don't know. You know, it's just crazy. I don't know if we can get any crazier and not just totally go bazonkos. Looking at the things that come across my news feed, and then I have, of course, 25, 30 news sources that I typically look at three or four times a day because I trust them and have built, you know, time and experience with these different sources and different writers that I trust. But it's kind of crazy. And I think that sometimes people get overwhelmed. And I believe that this is a great conversation because the Weimar Republic talks about, you know, it was the first time they had a democracy. Now, that means they had, you know, a king, so to speak, you know, prior to that in the First World War. And somehow the powers, you know, Britain, the U.S., and everybody else was able to convince the world that it was Germany's fault. And the Germans were not happy with that because they were, it was kind of interesting, but it was a knee-jerk reaction to somebody else starting the war. So it's just interesting how that manipulation factor is all throughout history. And so they come in, and a lot of the laws, similar to what's going on in the Ukraine, similar to what happened to Russia when it collapsed, is the Western powers wrote the laws. You know, they came in and said, here's what you're going to do, here's how you're going to do it, here's how your laws are going to work, here's how you're going to elect your government, and, you know, that spreading democracy concept. And, oh, by the way, you're going to have a central bank, and you've got to pay everybody back that you waged war on, and now you're in debt up to your eyeballs. And a lot of people have not studied this because most of us, you know, as far back as we can remember anything would possibly be Vietnam or the Second World War. And I grew up, you know, in the 60s and 70s. So, you know, the Second World War was, you know, the big event in all the movies and things like that. So you got a lot of historical perspective, a lot of movie propaganda at, you know, how we saved the world. So the Weimar Republic was a very interesting study, and you posted a bunch of vids, and I posted some stuff, and I actually, I think I got through 98% of it. There was some other stuff that I wanted to study up on. But, you know, they had this democracy, and with this democracy came this concept of anything goes. And in other words, there's no holds barred. Well, at the same time, everybody was screwing everybody, you know, in every which way you can imagine, including animals. The country was falling apart. You know, the government was corrupt. It was in debt. It could never pay it back. I'm sure that, you know, if you really got into study, you would see, you know, laws being passed and money being printed, and you would see all the same things that are going on right now. So while everybody was, you know, partying and screwing and having a good old time in Berlin, the average person, the middle class, was falling apart, and the average person, you know, the family who didn't think that, you know, having sex with a dog was really the way to go, you know, they were suffering through this. And when you don't have a middle class, this is so important to understand this when you look at this, you know, when you go down that conspiratorial concept of totalitarianism and what's coming and Bilderberg and the Fed and the IMF and the central bankers and the Rothschilds, and, you know, you go down all these different trails. The one key thing for total control is indebtedness, central bank, wars, and destroy the middle class. Because when you have that, all the people at the top control everything, and all the wealth is up there. So you still have kings and queens, except now they're called Congress, or, you know, whatever the term is in whatever country. And you have the people at the top and the captains of industry. So you have this merge between government and corporations, which is, if you go down to Italy at this time, was called fascism. Or if you come forward to the 21st century, it's called corporatism. But it's all the same crap. It's where law does not matter. Who you know, who you are, is the law and the power. And you get all the money and the bread, and the rest of the country falls apart, works their ass off, pays their taxes, and basically starves until you have a collapse. Or in this case with Weimar, you had a hyperinflation. And I love that, $200 million dollars, you know, to buy something at the store, $70 million for a loaf of bread. And you know, it's happened before, and it'll happen again. And for some reason, we come back to that conversation that we have a little bit every week is, oh, but that couldn't happen here. We're America. Well, who pickled your frickin' brain? The same dynamics for the collapse of the Roman Empire, Weimar Republic, you know, all of it is the same dynamics that we're experiencing today. The only difference is the absolute, you know, fiat currency, central bank, you know, war machine, constant war, a failing middle class, you know, the welfare warfare state. The same dynamics are happening again. The only difference is in today's world, you know, we have electronic currency, so you're not going to be pushing around a wheelbarrow. You're going to have an EBT card, haha. All right, and the difference is that we're the world currency, you know, the reserve currency. Well, we're rapidly losing that
for now.
But that, yeah, for now, we're losing it fast. It's going down faster and faster. The more stuff I study, you know, the Russia-China deal, BRICS, blah blah blah. You know, in fact, even the EU. You know, is a competitive currency against ours. So the U.S. has been riding this tidal wave since the Second World War, you know, and people have had their hand out, and we've built this wonderful country, and we got stoplights and roads and railroads and bridges and lions and tigers and bears and trains. Well, it's kind of falling apart, but, you know, and public education. And we built this incredible country. And then we spread it around the world, you know, in terms of, well, you could argue about if what kind of democracy we're spreading around the world, but, you know, that wealth impacted the whole world, and everybody rode this the coattails of the USA. But somewhere along the line, in fact, I remember his name. I am not a crook. Oh, yeah, Nixon, a Republican, took us off the gold standard because the Vietnam War was breaking the bank. And the world market was starting to pull back and say, hey, I want to cash in these bond money, the U.S. debt we've been buying, so you guys can wage war in a country that most people didn't know existed until we went to war there, like all of our wars. And, you know, they started to wanting gold back, exchange, because they had taken away the private exchange for gold, where you know, in the old days, you used to be able to walk in a bank and say, you know, I got $100 U.S., and I want $100 gold. And that exchange was common. It was just there. And then they took that away, and then only governments could do it, and banks. And then what happened was governments of the world saw the U.S. faltering. And so Nixon took us off the gold standard, said, oh, we're going to suspend this temporarily. Yeah, right, temporarily. And then he set up this deal with this terrible nation, you know, some of the worst human rights offenders in the world. And he set up this deal with Saudi Arabia where they would exchange only oil purchases, sales, blah, 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 in the U.S. petrodollar or the reserve currency. And then that became the replacement for our failing dollar. We became the reserve currency of the world, the oil exchange money. So if you wanted to buy oil from a company, first you had to buy U.S. dollars, and then you would go to, you know, Saudi or whoever, and you would pay for the oil in U.S. dollars, and then you could figure out what you're going to do with your U.S. dollars afterwards. Well, this created a whole new rapid acceleration of, you know, we got out of the war, and then we had some good times, and then we had some bad times, and then we had some good times. But all along this journey, Rex, it's so important for people to understand this. Nobody was dealing with the issues of the Fed or the illegal central bank or the concept of taxes. Everybody was working and thinking they were prospering and blah, blah, blah. You know, chasing the American dream and living like, you know, a middle-class prosperity that had never existed in the history of the world. And everybody was just riding that wave. And then all of a sudden, we woke up. In 2008, you know, Bush, they raised the debt ceiling five times, record increase in debt, you know, of all presidents put together. It's amazing nobody talks about this. You know, the Patriot Act, TSA, Homeland Security, the endless war on terror. You know, it's like all of a sudden we found out these guys were bad. They've been around 1,400 years. And they created this whole dynamics, this fear-driven insanity. The Fed started handing out money cheap. So everybody started borrowing and buying houses and speculating and building subdivisions and building buildings and playing in the stock market. And everybody got involved, and we built these massive bubbles on top of this fake currency, on top of, you know, a problem that's been band-aided over again and again through every depression and recession since the turn of the century. And you can go farther back, but that's really where it really dynamically changed in 1913. 2008 happens. I listen to people and read people who predicted it, and those are the people I listen to today, and they say we're in a bigger bubbles, we're in a bigger crisis than we were going into 2008. They get smeared, even though they predicted it last time, and they were heroes because everybody goes, wow, but everybody's riding. You know, the Fed's printing money every month. We've never done it to this degree. Looking for another war, you know, poking Russia in the eye, poking China in the eye, you know, pivoting to Asia, you know, Obama getting up there, rah, 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 you know, and we're like, oh, okay, we're prepping for the next war. And this one's going to be big because we're not invading third world nations. This time we're invading two of the biggest superpowers in the world next to us and catching up very fast. And so and we talk about this stuff, and here we are a week later, and I'm wondering, do people get it? Can you can you shut off Fox noise? Because think about this. This is actually a post I wrote today. And I was patting myself on the back a little bit because I thought it was very relevant. When Bush screwed up the economy, the Democrats had control of Congress the last 2 years. No. That was a knee-jerk reaction. Yeah, they screwed up on top of what Bush did. But do not forget, when the Republicans had power for 6 years, they acted like Democrats. They launched endless wars, and then they raised the debt ceiling 5 times. You know, you're going to pay a price for that.
You remember this?
I've abandoned free market principles to save the free market system.
That's pretty messed up.
Now, think about this. This is important to understand this. Obama and the Democrats won the House and the Senate and the presidency attacking Bush economics. Where do you hear anything on Fox News or conservative radio talking about the disaster we're in? You know why they don't talk about it? Because your Republicans that you're putting back in office, which just blows me away, putting back in office, voted for the debt ceiling increase, voted for more tax increases, and voted with the debt. Yeah, they whine and they moan and they cry, and Boehner cries, and then he has another drink and plays some more golf, and then they whine and they moan, and then they cave again and again and again and again, and they could destroy him. And then the invasion, you know, Syria, funding so-called rebels, who everybody in the world knows are jihadis, to invade another sovereign nation, what he did in Libya. And here we are, all these scandals, one after the other, after the other, after the other, after the other. You look at what people post and talk about. Oh, my God, now we're going to talk about this, and we're going to talk about a plane, and we're going to talk about that, and we're going to talk about the exchange, and then we're going to talk about that. Oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. And yet the thing they could win on, 110%, the thing that the American public is concerned with more than gay marriage, more than pot, more than the guy that they exchanged in Afghanistan, who gives a crap? You know, we already know what Obama does in the Middle East. I mean, it's all over the Internet. If you don't know, then you can't type, okay? And yet, they could win hands-down sweeping success on one thing, the economy, but they won't talk about it. You know why? Because they're part of the problem. And that brings us back to the core of what our probably 90% of our conversation is. Quit putting these frickin' rhino progressive socialist liars who claim they're Republicans, who claim they're conservative, who claim they're Christians when it's time to get elected, back in power, because we will never defeat the socialists and the communists in this country as long as you put Boehner and McConnell and Lindsey Graham and Cornyn and the rest of these guys who are all part of the Bush era experiment in democratic rule. You know, you're putting them back in office. Sorry, I had a long rant there. But this is important because there's a correction coming. And who is in power when this correction hits will define whether or not we're going to end up with a strong man, you know, or we're going to end up moving back to a republic. I really believe that. You're up.
Jawohl, Herr Doktor. No, all good points, and I think that the important thing to keep in mind is that human beings haven't changed. We have this modern notion that human beings are somehow evolved. Okay, maybe we have evolved, but in the last 10,000 years, you know, there hasn't really been much change, and our intrinsic nature is pretty much still fundamentally the same. And whether you look at this from a Christian perspective or a philosophical perspective or a metaphysical perspective or simply a rational perspective and empirically observe human history, you'll realize that there is one fundamental truth, and that is that we are prone to have very high ideals and never live up to them. I don't care how you look at it. That is the history of mankind. And knowing that we will – we all, the best of us, are prone to corruption. When we have the means, whether those means happen to be wealth or whether they happen to be power, we tend to screw it up. And it was Lord Acton who said that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Robert Heinlein said that power attracts the corrupt. Well, if you're corrupt and you want to exercise your corruption, you're obviously going to be attracted to power. And that's the situation we find ourselves. After 2.25 centuries of the Republic, we are where we are because we have permitted corruption to consolidate power. The Founding Fathers established this Republic on the principle that power needs to be diffused because they didn't even trust themselves with that power. And in fact, many of them who founded the Republic, whether it was through the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, the War for Independence, or both, or all three, they tended to even misuse the very power that they acquired when they were elected to office. So they validated their own principle by their own actions. And that is precisely why, if we want to be a free people, then we have to be governing ourselves. Now, everybody thinks that that means that you elect some jerk-off to go represent your interests. Well, think about that for a second. If you think that voting is the only thing that makes you free and the only thing that defines our, quote, democratic republic, explain Adolf Hitler. The Nazis were elected, popularly elected. So just because you vote doesn't mean you're free. It means you get to select the assholes who rule over you. In some sense, you're probably better off with a monarchy. At least there is a sense of stewardship for the realm in a lifelong position in an inherited monarchy. When you're electing temporary rulers, their only interest is the extension of power and wealth and position for the period that they rule. Now, let's be clear about something. They never rule forever. Hitler didn't rule forever. Franco didn't rule forever. The Soviets didn't rule forever. And the idiots that run our government won't rule forever. Everybody is always running around like a chicken with that head. Obama's the Antichrist. Obama's a Nazi. Obama's the savior. Whatever. Obama's the current meat puppet. And in 2 years, he's gone. Do you think things are going to change? Do you think Hillary's going to be any better? Or Jeb Bush? Or Mike Huckabee? You really think they're going to be better? If that's what you think, and believe me, a lot of Americans do think that, then we are the Weimar Republic, and we are going to head into chaos. And when there's chaos, people will scramble for the strongman. The Jacobin Revolution in France caused so much chaos, the assignat was a fiat-backed currency. After they stole the land from the church and the aristocrats and printed fake money on top of it, they eventually caused a hyperinflation. It got so bad, the whole system collapsed, the Reign of Terror, and people needed order. So what do? They turned to Napoleon Bonaparte. That's the same thing the Germans did. They turned to Adolf Hitler. It's the same thing that's going to happen here. Now, the difference is at this time, it ain't going to be an in-your-face, ballsy, masculine, 1984-style tyranny. It's going to be soft and effeminate and happy and entertaining with nice graphics on the TV to tell you what to think. That's what you're heading towards, and most of us are already there. And the problem is, as a grassroots political activist, if your only goal is to get people turned out to vote, you're missing the point. Because voting ain't going to change it. Now, I'm not saying don't vote. Of course, voting is important, and it's also a civic duty, and we have to do that. But you've got to get them involved long before the polls, and you have to get them informed about how the process really works. It's not just about voting. It is about enforcing the existing law, and right now we don't do that. The executive department just traded, I think, about 5 terrorists for that hostage, whatever the story is. I don't know all the details, but apparently they did that illegally. And you can go back through administration after administration all the way back to World War II, and you'll find that all of them did something that they weren't supposed to do, and some of them warned you about it. Reagan said that government is the problem, it's not the solution. There's some truth to that. I think that having no government is a big problem too, but having a bad government can often be worse. Eisenhower warned you, military-industrial complex. Kennedy warned you, and then you got shot a couple of days later. So it's entrenched, and the natural reaction is to think, well, it's the black hand of the the New World Order, and there's nothing we can do about it. Well, come on. There's been oligarchs trying to rule us since the dawn of man, and we've thrown their yokes off before, and you can do it again. Now, if you think that an armed revolt is going to be the answer, you got another thing coming. The Americans are not currently predisposed to take on the superior military capability of the, quote, New World Order. But we can change it from within. We still have the political tools. They never took them away from us. They just taught us to stop using them. They, quote, made the militia, the unorganized militia in 1933, and we accepted it. Because, hey, you know what? If somebody else is going to police my neighborhood, I don't have to, and I can go play golf. See, it's the numbing of our minds that has made us similar to the Weimar Germans. And you heard in that opening clip, you know, right now we're running around talking about equality of marriage and fairness of marriage. And that kind of stuff is what brings it down. That kind of libertine hedonism is what turns your goal in life into seeking pleasure, and therefore you are not able to govern yourself. On the other side of the equation, you got your Mike Huckabees and Rick Santorums who think that the way that you police yourselves is that the government makes you moral. That is just as insane. In fact, that overreaction that the Germans had is what essentially led to the rise of the Nazis and to the confusion that people have that somehow, because they were anti-communist and they were militaristic and imposed order, that somehow the Nazis were a right-wing movement. They're national socialists. Yes, compared to the Spartacists and the communists, they are to the right. But they're not compared to the right of classical liberalism, libertarianism, or conservatism as we understand it in the United States. That's the confusion. So everybody likes to use the Nazis as the boogeyman against everybody else. And, you know, when it was done by some people on the right when Obama was elected, oh, you can't do that, that's racist, that's mean. But it was perfectly okay to do it to Bush. Frankly, is there really a difference between Bush and Obama? I mean, come on, the policies are more or less identical. It is the establishment welfare warfare state that's doing this. You've got to teach people that if you're going to be free, you have to participate. You have to govern yourself. That means you govern your disordered appetites, and you also govern locally to the utmost extent possible, because if you leave that vacuum open, the feds are going to step in. And that's when people start losing their land. That's when veterans start waiting 115 days for their doctor. That's when something as disastrous as, quote, Obamacare gets put in place. That's when they start destabilizing countries across the globe in your name and sending your young men and women over to mop up afterwards. I mean, this is insane. This is unsustainable. And the biggest problem of all is your permissiveness, the lack of moral fortitude that makes us a strong and resolute people who can have liberty. And when we are full of vice and greed and selfishness and hedonistic pleasure-seeking, then the next thing we want is easy money so we can buy crap that we don't need and acquire things that are normally out of our reach because we're mortgaging our children to get them. And that's why they are able to set up a central bank. I mean, let's face it, Americans have gotten wealthy because of the central bank. Now, we've also become impoverished. But the reason we don't feel impoverished is because we've impoverished the rest of the world at a faster pace than the bankers have impoverished us in this country. But 40-some years into it, that's about to change. And the rest of the world, as Chris was talking about, is sick of us screwing things up with our dollars over there. So you got this pleasure-seeking hedonism, you got this central bank, right? And then you get the idea that, well, you know what, liberty is kind of hard. You know, we got to negotiate stuff. We have to be responsible for our contracts. We have to meet our obligations. We have to pay our debts. We actually have to keep an eye out for criminals internally and externally and do something about ourselves, and that requires training and organization. You know, it's just easier to hire a mercenary from the state to do that. And there it is. Your laziness, your moral decay, and your desire for easy money has permitted them to create a superstructure that benefits them at your expense, and you like it. Of course, if you're listening to the show, you don't like it. But what I mean is, that's where America is. That's the battle that you're facing. Now, you can put your head in the sand, pretend it's not happening. You can cry about it. You can vote for, quote, Republicans and hope they turn out to be okay, when all you're really doing is perpetuating the system. Or you can get busier, you can get more active, you can teach people the truth, and you can get them out there to support candidates who are going to at least try to slow down the expansion that's going on, get some kind of fiscal sanity in place, some kind of foreign policy restraint, while you work locally to change things. Otherwise, just sit back and wait for the rise of the fascists. Isn't that how it goes down, Chris? You get the chaos, you get the good times, the golden era, the golden 20s, and then before you know it, things collapse, and what do you want? The strong man, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the next step. You know, it just, I mean, you know, we could take Rome and break it down. We could get in depth in the Weimar Republic. I mean, all this stuff is all happened before, you know, and it's real interesting because if you go into the historical perspective of this, you know, when they went from kings and queens and monarchs and all that era, that was the world ran that way. And then they created a new system, and like I said, I can pull up documents going to history on this stuff, but they created a new system of democracy coming out of the revolutions, because the U.S., you know, we're so self-focused in this country on our revolution. Well, it was an important one because it was probably a better one than the rest of them, because the French Revolution was just terrible. And, you know, a lot of people died. It was just gruesome. But, you know, our founding fathers were amazing. And you are absolutely correct. You said this earlier, that they understood that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And these guys weren't fools. They were learned men and women, and they were many of them were very wealthy and educated and very involved in world affairs. You know, they traveled to other countries. They were ambassadors to France and England. And, you know, they were pretty savvy. And when they put the country together, what they wanted, number one, was no central bank, number one, because they already knew what the hell that did to you. Number two, what they wanted was a diffused power system. You know, then, I remember hearing you talk about this the first time and really spurred my desire to educate myself on some of these things, talking about that lateral and horizontal diffusion of power. You know, at the federal level, you have, you know, the House, the Senate, the judicial, and the presidential administration, and then you have down to the states, down to the individual, and that system was actually ingenious, and they put that together for a reason, because they understood the heart of man. Man is corrupt somewhere along the line, and I don't know if it's just a bunch of bullcrap and part of the whole Trotsky, you know, communism mindset that we can BS people into believing this, okay, or liberals actually believe that they can change man and make him better. You know, I don't know if it's a combination of both or one or the other, but you see, if you go back and you look at and you read the early people that were developing communism and socialism, you know, they had definite strategies. And, you know, like the 10 planks of communism, you know, were pretty much check, 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 you know, break down the moral society. The first goal of any socialist, communist, godless system is you've got to destroy the family unit in order to destroy the religious foundation, because it is one of the most cohesive systems of mankind, you know, from the family to your religious beliefs, and then it spins out from there into everything you do in your life. And you have to destroy that if you're going to implement these totalitarian systems. And I don't care if Hitler was kind of an interesting guy, because he acted like he wanted to clean up the debauchery and you know, bring order back to the country. And for a while he did. And it's really interesting because most people's perspective of Hitler is, you know, at the point of the death camps. I mean, there's a whole lot of history before that. You know, he cleaned up the country. We had American businesses over there. In fact, the Bush family made their initial wealth dealing with Hitler. You know, and you know, are you serious? Yeah, look it up. It's called typing in Google or, you know, whatever you use. I don't use Google. I use the other one. But
Google.
But a lot of people don't understand this. But and in fact, you know, you look at the English royalty, a whole crap load of them were married to high-level Nazis, you know. And
the whole family
their biggest
was
problem. Yeah, their biggest problem.
The Windsor family's real name is Saxe-Gotha or something like that. They're Germans.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much history that people just don't get because you're programmed in this country like you are in any country to believe what that the leaders of that country want you to believe. And when you actually do study, see, I don't do study to tear my country apart. I do study to understand the truth and to save my country. You know, I'm not looking to rip America apart because America's a great land and its foundational principles are incredible and its governing principles are incredible and its economic principles before these idiots gave us a central bank was incredible, tremendous amount of prosperity. In fact, the colonies were very prosperous. They had the highest standard of living of any colony in the world under the British rule. These guys were business people and traders and growers and agriculture, and they made things, and they traded around the world because that was, you know, the British Empire was built off of the sailing ship and, of course, their army and marines, but, you know, their ability to protect it. But it's so important to understand that this whole philosophy, this concept, this communist manifesto and what they did in Russia, in fact, Russia – yeah, and this is so crazy. A lot of people, you know, they just their whole perspective of Russia was from the revolution forward. And if you actually did the research, you realize that it really had to do with oil. Again, oil. Because the Tsar did not want the American companies to control their oil. He wanted to, you know, and Russia is a very rich land, oils, minerals, gas, you know, timber, whatever. And the central banks wanted control of that country. They wanted just like today. You go into the Ukraine, you topple the government with your NGOs. You know, it's already a corrupt government to begin with. You topple the government, you lend them a bunch of freaking money, and then you implement austerity measures. You destroy the middle class. You impoverish everybody. You raise taxes. You raise energy costs. People are looking to freaking survive. You know, and then you act like you're their friend, and really what happens is the oligarchs at the top make a fortune, the bank makes a fortune, the industrials who come in and they privatize businesses, and they make a fortune, they buy everything, they bleed the damn country off. This is what America calls spreading democracy, and it's been done hundreds of times. And I remember, you know, just little bits and pieces. I can't listen to Obama's whole speeches. You know, I go crazy. But, you know, he was talking about, you know, America is, you know, is the indispensable power in the world. We've spread democracy to more countries around the world, blah, 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 blah. And I'm thinking, you mean like Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, Libya, South America? How are those countries doing? How's that democracy working? We don't spread democracy. In fact, let's put it this way. We're not a democracy. We're a republic. So when you spread democracy based on this socialist, neoliberal concept, what you're doing is spreading centralized control, democratic, socialist government. And in the Ukraine, you know, people don't understand this, but eastern Ukraine, you know, they split off. They had a vote. Now we got, you know, citizens being killed and murdered. And, of course, you won't hear that in Western media. And all they want, they want a republic. They want what's called federalization. They want the right to vote in their own governor. In Ukraine, you're appointed your governor. Can you imagine Obama having the power to appoint all the governors of all the states? And that means all basically control the individual or the oblasts. If you're talking about the Ukraine, that's what the U.S. is backing, and they're backing Nazis. That's a funny one because we're talking about the Weimar Republic and the Reich. Yeah, no, or jihadis or whatever works, right? But they don't want a republic. They don't want a federalized state. What they want is central control, indebted to the IMF, which, you know, just say Fed, IMF, interchangeable, except they have a better balance sheet than the Fed does. And so basically what they want is central control. The guy who just won the chocolate king, Willy Wonka, he was in the last three administrations. You know, the last three administrations, back to the Orange Revolution, he was in those administrations that we funded, the Orange Revolutions. We color-coded the revolutions in Eastern Europe, you know, but basically they're funded by our NGOs all the way up to USAID. You know, which means that all these non-profit, you know, social, non-government organizations are all funded by the damn federal government, you know, who's all funded by the Fed and the central banks and the big corporations who get to go in and bleed the frickin' country dry and leave it in chaos. And really, they don't give a crap about Ukraine. This is all about Russia, just like Syria is all about Russia, just like Iran is all about Russia. You know, they never wanted Russia to, you know, they broke up a lot of Russia. The U.S. wrote all the laws and all the contracts. When Putin took control, he sat down and looked at the contracts going, why are we broke? We have all this oil and gas. Well, all the contracts and laws have been written. They were basically, the U.S. companies were taking all the profits, U.S. and European companies, all the profits off of Russia, and Russia was actually having to pay them to come into Russia and take their oil. And Putin goes, well, this ain't going to work, and he changed it. And then he paid off the debt, and he took the economy to $2.5 trillion, $2.7 trillion, and the central banks and the U.S. have hated him ever since because they had a good deal going on in Russia under Yeltsin because he was another oligarch who was a propped up, basically a puppet, propped up by the U.S. government, so all the corporations could come in and bleed off their natural resources, and then a handful of people, you know, 10 oligarchs made all the money, and everybody else starved. And Putin said, that ain't going to work here. And that's really what we're dealing with on the world market. You know, we're dealing with a transitional position right now in our world where whether you deal with BRICS, which is, you know, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South America, and a whole bunch of other countries starting to, you know, want to get a membership in that. They're being very careful of it because there's certain economic, you know, things they want. And the new bank that they're producing, the Russia-China deal, actually there's 40 deals. You only hear about the one big gas deal, but there's 40 deals that they signed. You know, what India, the new president of India, and what that's going to mean, and India working out their issues with the China border, you know, people are working hard to build relationships, get over past issues, and formulating these economic blocks because they're waiting for the next crash. They're looking at the U.S. going, these freaking idiots are doing nothing to repair their economy. They're stagnant, 0.01% for the last 5 years. You know, unemployment, poverty, you know, welfare, food stamps, disability. Our veterans are dying because they're not getting taken care of. If you were on the outside looking in going, that's who controls the money that I'm tied to, you too possibly as a world leader or a president of a country would start thinking about, hey, is there somebody else we can tie our economic system to that isn't going to destroy us again? That's really where we're at.
We're thinking the same thing, and we live here. We really want to tie our economic destiny to the Federal Reserve because it's screwing us, just like
it's
the German. Believe it or not, we are at the top of the hour, and
wow.
We still haven't gotten to the hyperinflation of Weimar Germany. But just want to real quick thank everybody who has shared the show. Remember that Chris and I pay to do this, and we invest time doing it. Chris works very hard in his group, which is Liberty's Talk on Facebook. Make sure you check it out. There's a lot of good data in there, a lot of good information about what's going on. And given the fact that we have a parasite in our government that basically is aggrandizing itself, we have a welfare warfare state, which means that you better pay attention to what they're doing overseas because, A, they're doing it in your name. B, they're bleeding out your young ones' lives and your treasure. And every time that they get more involved overseas, they become more tyrannical here. It's all of a piece. You've got to change it. We appreciate everybody who's sharing the show. Remember, no one knows that this show exists unless you tell them. We have ways of making you talk, but we have no ways of making you listen. That's up to you. You're the grassroots. You're the advertising and marketing arm for this show. If you don't tell someone it's here, they don't know about it. So make sure that when you see it out there on Facebook and our page on Facebook, make sure you like it, interact with it. That's Liberty's Thunder on Facebook. Or you see a tweet out there, please get that out there and take it beyond Facebook, take it beyond Twitter, take it beyond the Internet. Nothing works better than a personal invitation to check out the show. And just because you told someone to listen to it does not mean you endorse everything we say or all our viewpoints. All we're trying to do is get people to understand that there is a different way of thinking about things than this false left-right paradigm, and also a different way about thinking things than just assuming that, you know, the NWO has controlled everything and everybody's, you know, mind-controlled by them and it's over. There's nothing you can do about it. There's always something you can do about it. And if you succeed or if you fail is not as much the point as that you have to do your best. If you don't even try, then it's already over. You've got to try. You've got to reclaim your inheritance of liberty. And the electoral process is but one aspect of that. But it is pretty darn important, because if you get more Rand Pauls and more Ted Cruz's and more Mike Lees and more Trey Gowdy's and more Justin Amash at the federal level, you could at least interfere with their plans. But if you keep getting more Mitch McConnell's, Johnny Boehner's, Bob Bailout Corkers and crony Cornyn's, forget about it. They're just going to make things worse, and then it's all going to collapse, and then you'll turn to the strong man, whoever that might be, or the strong woman, I guess, and it'll be over. It'll look like America, but it won't be. It'll be a lot more like Nazi Germany or Soviet Russia. So you have to do that work. It sucks because you're listening, you know about it, you're getting informed, you're teaching yourself. You got to teach other people. You need to create a force multiplier. So thank you for sharing the show. At any time you want to listen to any of our shows, they're available free of charge on our Blog Talk Radio page. Just go to blogtalkradio.com, search out Liberty's Thunder. You scroll down the page. All the shows are listed there by title. You click on the title. It's a hyperlink, and it plays right in your browser free of charge. And if you go below the scrolling graphics, you can download an MP3 and play that in your MP3-enabled device, send somebody an email, burn a CD, take it to your Campaign for Liberty meetings, your Republican Party meetings, your Tea Party meetings, your AA meetings, whatever. Just get the word out there. Get people involved in something more than just simply showing up to pull the lever for the next jerk-off, which is usually the last jerk-off since 95% of these guys keep getting reelected. Wake them up. They don't want to see it. Some of this stuff is scary. Don't just bombard people with this information. But get them to understand that what they think is going on because they watch Fox News or MSLSD or CNN, the Communist News Network, they don't know what's going on. That is corporate propaganda and psyops. Six corporations own just about all the media, and there's just as much misinformation in the so-called alternate media out there. So double-check everything. But line up with your principles. If you have a good moral compass and you understand your history, you can discern these things. If you don't have a good moral compass, you're blinded by your own vice, and you're seeking pleasures below the belt as your highest priority, okay, and you don't know your history, you won't believe any of the bullshit that they feed you, and you will do what they need to do. You will, oh, we got to get rid of these teabagger liberty anarchists because they're ruining the Republican Party. The Republican Party is not only ruined, it's dead. And I mean, Mitt Romney and Ginsburg and Sununu and Boehner with his eyes have it, killed it in Tampa in 2012. Now, do we want to resurrect it? I could care less about elephant imagery, pachyderms, rhinos, or the Republican Party. But the fact is that right now, the way the rules are set up, nobody who's not a Democrat or Republican is going to get a position of power at the federal level. Period. That's just the facts. So take over one of the wings of this friggin' duopoly and start changing the rules of the game. Now, we've been talking about the Weimar Republic. And if you haven't studied up on that, please do, because the parallels are astounding. And Berlin, during the Weimar Republic, and actually a lot of parts of Germany, was just a sick place. If you thought that the late 60s were some kind of cultural chaotic revolution here in these United States, it's nothing compared to what was going on in the Weimar Republic before the whole thing turned into a nasty, messy soup that, quote, got cleaned up by the Nazis. That's not the kind of solution that we want. It resulted in millions of people being killed, a tyranny, and it was horrible. And keep something in mind. Excuse me. Chris was talking about the Soviets. Well, who was beating the crap out of Germany in World War I? The Western Allies and the Russians. Now, the Germans needed some kind of relief, so they actually sent Lenin, the industrialists there, also the American industrialists, sent Lenin from Germany in a sealed boxcar so that no one would know he was there, to Russia to foment the revolution, because that revolution caused Russia to ease off beating the crap out of Germany, which was much bigger in before World War I than it was in the Weimar days. So, you know, these things all tie in, and it's usually you follow the money. Somebody is making massive profits off your back, and they move the pieces around like a chessboard. Hitler was the darling of American capitalist industrialists like Prescott Bush, like the Rockefellers with IG Farben, until he decided, hey, you know what? I'm not only going to expand my territory, but we're going to start dealing with our own money. And you notice, whenever anybody, large or small, from Gaddafi to Hitler to Putin, starts talking about working with their own money and their own resources, that's when they turn your nationalistic jingoism on and make them the bad guy so that we will get our children killed to go put this guy down so that those that own the banks can make their profits. That's how it works. And if you don't stop it, they're going to keep doing it. I don't care if you succeed or fail in the process. It doesn't matter to them. That's where we are. Now, we'll try to take some calls in the second hour, but here's the thing to keep in mind. And, Chris, I'll let you roll, but then we're going to go into a kind of a long clip. You got several choices, people. You can take this information, which is arguably kind of scary.
Now what the fuck are we supposed to do? We're some real pretty shit now, man.
But when you lose your head, the aliens will crawl under the grates, jump into the small room you're in, and eat your skull. Don't lose your head. Pay attention. Learn. You can fix this. Now, maybe it won't happen in your lifetime. Maybe it will. I don't know. I can't predict the future. But what I do know is that you have to do something about it, because we're not only talking here about your ability to live free in the sense of worship, pray, exercise your religion, have some scratch in your pocket, raise your kids the way that you want to, be relatively unmolested, not only from your own, quote, policing power, which should be you yourself anyway, or foreign invasion. If you want that kind of a life, you got to work for it, and it isn't given to you. And here's the thing. The most insidious manipulation, other than the fact that they've convinced us that what used to be a check on our own appetites, a morality that was recognized as universal, well, they flip that on its ear now, where we exalt vice as virtue and we attack people for trying to live a virtuous life. You can't be free if you're not virtuous. Just that simple. No society has ever succeeded when they were libertine and hedonistic in sustaining themselves. It just can't be done. But the way that they get you is they get all these passions ginned up, they flip the morality upside down, and then they start with the debasement of the money. We're going to talk about that. I got a pretty good clip right now that's going to let you know about the parallels that are going on in our monetary policy here today that echo what happened in Weimar Germany. Before we get in that clip, Chris, you want to throw anything in there?
Yeah, I do. I had several things flash through my mind as you were talking. You trigger my critical thinking. But, you talked about my group. And this is not – I just want to add something just for people who joined. This is not an Obama this, Obama that group, okay? So I don't think I've ever posted anything on him, but because he's not the point. You know, he's just the neat puppet, you know, puppet.
I saw
is
a picture of him on a tricycle that you posted.
Well, that was fun, though. But you know what I mean. I don't get caught up in he did this, he did that. Half the things he does, I couldn't even give you the details on. I see the headlines, and then I move on to things that I'm researching. But here's the important thing to understand. Some of the best threads on this group are the Ukraine thread, because it exposes the truth, and it exposes the lies about what's really going on in Ukraine and and who Russia really is versus what the U.S. says Russia is, or the U.S. government and the media, you know, which is, i.e., the bankers, and, you know, right now the Bilderbergs conference is going on, and I can guarantee you their number one conversation is Russia, because Putin won't play ball with the Rothschild bank. It's really that simple, and he won't, you know, let the corporations come in and bleed Russia off. In fact, he kicked them all out, including the bankers. So that's going to be a major conversation, the China-Russia deal. But there's other things going on, and the average person doesn't even know that we're in 45 countries in Africa now with this new AFRICOM division, and, of course, terrorism is popping up everywhere. Isn't that funny how that works? Not to get too deep down that rabbit hole, but, you know, the big thing about Africa is while we're busy blowing up the Middle East and spreading democracy, and I just had an article as you were talking, the 800 people died this month in Iraq. That, how's that democracy working in Iraq? You know, it's thousands and thousands and thousands of people, 35, 40, 50 people a day right now. It's just this war-torn nation. You've got the Sunni Shia just, you know, just killing each other left and right, and, you know, while they're trying to pump oil and gas. But, you know, it's the same thing with Afghanistan. It's like, what the hell are 10,000 troops going to do in Afghanistan? Protect the poppy fields? Come on.
9,000, you know, 9,800.
Oh, 9,000, that's a satanic number, right? But the key here, in all these situations, these are some of the most important threads on the group, because these are the things that are going to make or break the U.S.'s weak spine. Because everything that the U.S. is doing around the world, and the Asia pivot and this bullcrap, you know, and Africa and Ukraine, is all about, you know, trying to get at the countries, China and Russia, who are moving away from the U.S. dollar. See, in Iraq, you know, he was moving away from the U.S. dollar. He used to be all tied to the, you know, U.S. petrodollar and all that crap, and then he said, screw that, I'm moving away. Well, they blew the country up. Same with Libya. Had nothing to do with freaking, you know, the protests or innocent people dying. You know, we could give a shit about innocent people dying. There's thousands of them a day die all over the world, you know, and why isn't it important? Oh, well, they don't got oil.
It's on YouTube.
So who cares, you know? But if they got oil or minerals or gas, and all of a sudden it's important. So, you know, it's all this corporatism crap, you know, and the central banks is all behind it. But, you know, the bottom line is the U.S. trade dollar, the reserve currency of the petrodollar, is basically evaporating around the world as countries either move to the EU money, the IMF currency, or Russia, China, these new deals. And the problem is now is Russia and China aren't third world nations that we can just blow up and topple and, you know, cause a false flag and invade, because they'll kick the shit out of us if we do. And that's the problem. And so all the crap that you see going on all over the world is about one thing: China and Russia leading the exodus from the U.S. dollar. And it's not just China and Russia. It's also Europe. There was a 30% changeover in elections, and most people, I have a European thread. Why? Not that I give a crap about Europe, but Europe, you know, and the IMF and the European Union are big issues in the world, and there's a major change. We just had a 30% conservative takeover of government across the land in Europe, you know, like i.e. Tea Party conservatives-type people going, we're sick of this centralized government, we're sick of the EU pumping out laws every day, these unelected bureaucrats, you know, kind of like when you think about the NSA or the EPA or the TSA or Homeland Security, all these departments that just basically they're unelected bureaucrats that write laws all day long, you know, and you don't even know what the hell it's about, and Congress isn't even writing them. You know, I mean, all the ABC, illegal to the Constitution, all these groups, you know, they wrote over 3,000 laws last year. Have you read them? You know, and Congress wrote like 30. You know, we are ruled very similar in this country through all these different agencies as the EU is ruled in Brussels. Well, people are getting sick of it because, you know, the middle class is falling apart. They have open borders. You know, they're like, people are going, whoa, you know, we care about nationalism. We care about our country and our history and our culture, and it's being destroyed while we're going broke and we can't pay our bills and we can't find a damn job. And the next generation is coming out of college, and there's no future. They look into the future going, it's not there. So there's a major upheaval in Europe in terms of the voting. Well, the problem with Americans is we don't freaking pay attention, so we just go cast a ballot and put Boehner and McConnell and Corker and Cornyn and Lindsay, those a-holes right back in freaking power. And they're part of the group that got us here. You know, the Bush era to the Obama era are like Carter times 1,000. It's that bad. And unfortunately, it's that bad on top of a failing economy. And I'm not talking about, let's say, put it in another term, failed economy. We do not have an economy. 0% growth is not an economy. No jobs is not an economy. Half the country in poverty is not an economy. Half the country on welfare or disability or unemployment is not an economy. It's not changing. It's not improving because the government is hampering this at every level. Obama's got his pet projects. The Republicans got their pet. You know, Republicans just basically want to fund the war machine, you know, and go launch some more wars. And they're really neocons, which came out of the neoliberal, which came out of Trotsky, who was a commie. You know, I mean, people just don't get this stuff. But, you know, if you're voting neocons, it's just overwhelming. But it's very simple if you do the research. We need
no one has time. Ain't got no time for that. Ain't nobody got time for that.
Yeah, I guess. Then listen to our damn show and join our group so we can have the conversations and educate you, because I don't have time for it either. But I do it anyway. And I'm not bragging. I'm just saying, you know, I'm shocked at how ignorant people are and how unwilling they are to learn. You know, let me go pull the lever or let me not vote. You know, well, that'll get you somewhere, you know.
It'll get you somewhere.
Helping ruin the damn country. Yeah. Weimar Republic, baby. So anyway,
all right, we got
rambled on a little bit. Do your thing.
No, good stuff. We got about 42 minutes left live at the top of the hour. That is 11 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening in your browser, you will be cut off, and we'll probably go a short while. I'd really like to get out of here soon, but we go a short while over time. And I got a closing clip. It's about 18 minutes with some really good data that you should listen to. Remember, always after we do our closing, there's a clip. Now, remember something. Because we pay for this and we have no advertising, you get 2 hours of commentary and an hour of clips of stuff that you may have missed because maybe you don't watch RT. You don't follow the financial media. You don't check out MSLSD every once in a while. You're just, you know, you're plugged on Fox Noise, maybe listen to Rush. You're only getting bits and pieces of the information. We try to put it together here for you. We take the time to do it. So if you don't want us to have to start taking on advertising to fund this thing, and you want to keep hearing these clips so that you don't have to spend all your week listening to all the bullshit on the news and trying to sift through it, then make sure that you keep helping us get the word out there, because we're not doing this for fun. We're not doing this for money. We're doing it because we live here, and I don't want this country to fall apart because the rest of the people are too friggin' lazy to do anything about it or unaware that there's a problem until it's too late. So at the top of the hour, you will be cut off. You can listen on your handset. So call in 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. This clip is about 14 minutes long. We'll be back, and we'll have about a half hour left of live air. We'll try to take some calls. But pay attention to this, even if you're not interested in the topic of economics and finance, because it's interested in you. Everything you do involves money, and this clip gets into that. Don't forget, coming up this Tuesday, we've got the Alabama primary, California, Iowa, Mississippi, Montana, New Mexico, and South Dakota. Make sure that you get real conservatives and real libertarians elected at all levels so that they can start working this back. And that means know who the sheriff is, know who the county commissioners are, know who your state representatives are. Make sure you get a good governor, because there's going to be a battle between the states and the federal government, and the victor of that battle is going to decide the future of this country. And if you don't have people who understand our history and understand the Constitution, the change is going to go in the wrong direction. The Weimar Germans never expected to become Nazis, but they did, and they elected the Nazis. And the biggest pressure came, first their moral decay, followed by financial pressure. And the financial pressure is what gave the Nazis the impetus to build the Third Reich. And that's exactly what will happen here, because we are economically illiterate. Pay attention to this clip.
When there is great economic upheaval, there is great political change. It usually goes along with it. In the hyperinflation in Weimar, Germany in 1923, this hyperinflation ended on November 15th, 1923. On November 8th, 1 week before the end of the hyperinflation, Hitler's stormtroopers pointed machine guns at the front door of the Bürgerbrau Keller, where there was a political meeting. This is a big beer hall, where there were about 3,000 people listening to political speeches. And on that night, he took the stage at gunpoint, and to this literally captive audience gave a speech that would change the world. Nobody knew the name Hitler. Nobody knew who he was until he gave this speech to a newly impoverished middle class, people that were scared and looking for somebody to lead them. And here this charismatic guy takes the stage, gives them a scapegoat, and says, I know the way out of this. The next day, those people in that beer hall followed him to try and do a coup to take over the government, and it failed. He was imprisoned. He was tried for high treason. His trial went on for an entire month. And during that month, he had the ear of the nation. He was covered in every newspaper all across Germany, and the judges were sympathetic to his beliefs. So they let him go on for hours on end with these speeches. And that's when he gained power. It was when the middle class was scared. The middle class defines a country with their vote. The country,
well,
as the middle class
big
goes
ones right
so
now,
goes
I would say Russia, China, and Saudi Arabia. You know, since the 1970s, Saudi Arabia has been the leader in what's called the petrodollar. And it basically means that Saudi Arabia, and by extension OPEC, price oil in dollars. So the world market in oil is in dollars. There's no reason why that has to be true. Today, oil could be in euros, it could be in yen, Swiss francs, oil could be in gold. But Saudi Arabia has always supported the idea that oil would be in dollars. Now, even if you don't want dollars, everyone needs oil, and if you need dollars to pay for the oil, then you have to have dollars. And that's an important prop under the dollar. Russia, of course, is a major natural resource exporter, and they have priced their exports in dollars as well. But Russia is now engaged in financial war with the United States around the issues in Crimea and Ukraine. And over to China, China has $3 trillion in dollars, but they're buying gold as fast as they can. China worries that the U.S. is going to devalue the dollar through inflation, and so they want to have a hedge. If the dollar goes down, the gold will go up. So, you know, China getting gold, Saudi Arabia backing away from the dollar, the U.S. and Russia confronting each other, three of the legs of the stool, Russia, China, and Saudi Arabia, are all being pulled out from under
but
the dollar. So they start out slowly, and then they can, you know, just like an avalanche or any other collapse, they can gain momentum. And confidence can be lost very quickly. Now, the problem is, you're exactly right, the United States has $17 trillion of debt. That's government debt. That's not counting all the unfunded liabilities for our Social Security and retirement, Medicare, Medicaid, student loans, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, all the guarantees. I mean, that amount is actually in the hundreds of trillions of dollars. There's no way, there's no combination of growth and taxes in the United States that can pay that debt. The only way you can pay it off is with inflation. Now, the Fed's trying to get inflation, but interestingly, because economic growth is so weak, because we're in a depression, the Fed's not actually getting much inflation. What they are getting are asset bubbles in stocks and housing, and then, of course, those bubbles will pop at some point. So, but the inflation's not here yet, but it is coming, and that's really the only way the U.S. can pay its debt. But that's one more thing that would drive other countries away from the dollar. Why would you hold dollars if the U.S. is
yes,
going to
despite the recent sell-off, you know, we've dropped about maybe 50 bucks from where we were at the highs last week. And I think a lot of people have jumped to the wrong conclusion with respect to gold. They think the macroeconomic fundamentals are not favorable to gold, and they couldn't be more wrong. We have a real inflation problem despite all this talk about there not being enough inflation. There's actually too much. And now the central banks are going to try to create even more. This is a very, very favorable environment for gold. You've got interest rates near zero around the world. You've got governments actively try to destroy the value of the fiat currencies that they're printing. And for people who want to protect their savings, protect the purchasing power of what they have, they're going to be increasing. Look, you know, if the Fed is not worried about something, they're not going to guard against it. They're not worried about inflation, and so their guard is down. But I think it's more than that. I think the Fed deliberately wants to create inflation. The Fed looks at inflation as their own get-out-of-jail-free card. They want inflation to bail out overly indebted governments. They want to use inflation to prop up inflated asset markets like stocks and real estate. So since they're going to create inflation, they also want to create an environment where the public believes that inflation is a good thing, so that as they're creating inflation, they can convince us that this is something that we should embrace. Because if we didn't have inflation, we would have the dreaded deflation or lowflation, where the cost of living would go down. That somehow the government is trying to convince everybody that if the things that they need, the things that they want, became more affordable, that would actually be a problem. And the government has to save us from that problem by creating inflation. But they're going to succeed a lot more than they're bargaining for. And the problem is, once inflation really gets out of control, the central banks are powerless to contain it, because the only way to do it would be to dramatically increase interest rates and bring about a financial crisis much worse than 2008. And no, that's something the Fed is here. I mean, inflation is a monetary phenomenon. It's got nothing to do with slack in the economy or an absence of demand or lots of unemployment. It literally, inflation is the expansion of the money supply. That's where the word comes from. That's what economists used to mean when they mentioned inflation. It was about the expansion of the money supply, the inflation of the money supply. So that's already here, and it's already increasing prices throughout the economy. And in some cases, it prevented prices from declining. But that's still a bad thing. If prices are supposed to fall and the government gets in the way and prevents that from happening by creating inflation, that is still damaging the economy, damaging consumers. And you're talking about, well, we have a lot of debtors. Isn't this the least painful way to repudiate those debts, is to inflate them away? I would argue that that is a more painful way. I think it's more healthy and less painful for the economy if you have too much debt to just default, to just restructure in an honest way, than to try to continue to increase your debt.
Well,
and rely on
inflation
to have the same effect.
Down.
You know, you're going to contract credit. Credit is going to become more expensive. But when you have economies that are so addicted to cheap money, when you have the aggregate level of debt that we have in the private sector and, more importantly, in the government sector, anything that increases the cost of credit is going to diminish the ability of governments to service these obligations or maintain the appearance of solvency, when in fact they're insolvent.
It raises the question of the long-term solvency of the U.S. That's a big concern for the global markets. It's one reason that nobody outside the United States really wants to hold dollars. You look at the U.S. economy. The economy is turning down. Economic strength, relative economic strength, is a big factor in the currency. As the downturn, renewed downturn, gains wider acceptance here, wider recognition, that will intensify the selling pressure. Political instabilities. Right now you're seeing a government that's having problems functioning the way it would on a happy basis in the United States. A lot of bickering, not too many positive things being done. President's popularity is down. Whenever that happens, and that happens fairly frequently with presidents, that's usually a good selling sign for the dollar. All these factors, you have a confluence of factors. You have the global political risks, and people such as China and Russia and Iran making noises about dumping the dollar, getting the dollar removed as the world reserve currency. We have many friendly powers that are in a similar circumstance. They know the dollar's going to lose its value. It's not worth what it's priced at now, but they don't want to be the guys that trigger the dollar sell-off. On the other hand, when someone starts selling, it's going to be a race for the door. And I'm looking for a dollar selling panic to be the proximal trigger for the onset of the hyperinflation. What we're seeing in the way of inflation now is a pickup in inflation, but it's not a hyperinflation. Massive dollar selling, that'll be the trigger.
I keep politics out of my forecast,
but I'm always open about where I stand. I'm old line conservative Republican with a libertarian bent, but that has nothing to do with my forecast. I'm equally disgruntled with both of the major parties at this point in time, is that they both of them have led us to where we are now with disaster, fiscal disaster, which is the root cause of everything else that's happened here. We've borrowed so much from the future, there's no way of possibly paying it off. And that puts you into the hyperinflation.
You're saying the future is here today.
The future is here, yes. You had a former Fed chairman who had been tutored by an earlier Fed chairman, said, hey, look, you ever run into political problems? Two things that will save you. Not a vote in either one of them. One is you let the dollar go to hell. And the second thing is you don't have to worry about the budget deficit. None of that will cost you any votes. And now we're to the point where the dollar has been ignored for years. The federal deficit's been ignored for years. But that's where we are right now. That's what we're on the brink of disaster with. The time has come. There's nothing forward in the future for this. We've got to get those things addressed now.
Try to run for the exit door at the same time. Nobody's going to want to hold. Nobody wants to hold the dollar. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. And indeed, the dollar is going to, as I see it, virtually go to zero in terms of its purchasing power. You don't want to have your assets in U.S. dollars.
That's an amazing statement. You think it'll virtually go to zero in terms of purchasing power, the U.S. dollar. And you're saying
that's what you would have with a hyperinflation. Simple example of when it gets very rapid and the pace is just beyond belief, the pace of inflation. Back in Germany in the great inflation they had in the 20s, you could buy an expensive bottle of wine at dinner one night, and the next morning that bottle would be worth more as scrap glass, empty, than it had been the night before filled with expensive wine. That's how rapid this can unfold. How rapidly.
You were saying that the war cycle begins slowly, and I think the economic war is on with the Ukraine crisis and the sanctions ratcheting up back and forth between the U.S. So we're witnessing financial war before a real shooting war. Is that what you're predicting?
It usually goes hand in hand. There could be big, you know, we have big problems. The shooting war could start in any place in the world lately. Since the Cold War is finished, a lot of problems and where it could start from. I still think it will come from the Middle East, the big problem. Oh, if you call Syria not the big problem, 170,000 people died till now, but there are going to be major problems over there.
No, I think it's 150,000 plus, I think, is in the, so far. It's a lot.
Yes. Once the countries over there go nuclear, then who knows where it's going to stop.
And you think the war will go nuclear when it starts? And you're predicting it'll start, and when it starts, it'll go nuclear in a hurry?
I think it's a big problem. I think the Americans are underestimating what's going on, and they continue to negotiate. They tried it with Korea. They didn't succeed. For me, as a Dutch person, I don't understand why they don't learn from the experiences and decide to please the countries that are trying to build up an arsenal. It is a major mistake, but that's what the policy is these days.
And when do you think this war cycle could be turned, hot, red-hot shooting nuclear?
Well, you don't have to go shooting nuclear, but I think in 1 year or so, we're in big trouble.
Within a year?
Yeah.
So before the end of 2015, we're going to have a hot war somewhere.
Yeah, and I have talked to some high position people in New York a couple of weeks ago, and what they're afraid of is for a nuclear device going off in New York. And when that goes off, we have a big problem, because until we find out who did it, I'm sure the Americans already want to hit back, but they don't know exactly who to hit back to. So they have really to be in touch and watch the terror groups, because I don't think the countries are going to do it. They're just going to give the stuff to terror groups and say, here, you go, and you blow up the places.
And they'll say, oop, not me. We didn't do this. That was Al-Qaeda.
Welcome to Vimerica. This is some pretty heavy, dark stuff. It sucks. I don't want to talk about it. We're not trying to depress you. It is what it is. First, you have a moral decay. Look around
in the last 40 or 50 years, what has happened to the moral fortitude of America? Then you get the fiscal malfeasance, excessive debt, inflation, consumerism, materialism, and when the thing reaches its hockey stick on the graph, which we're now in 42 years of absolutely nothing backing the Federal Reserve scheme that's been going on for 100 years, we're approaching that hockey stick. They got like a $5 trillion balance sheet now. $5 trillion, I mean, $1 trillion, if you were to get $100 bills with the Ben Franklin on them and stack them up as high as trailers in a Walmart-sized, you know, like a super Walmart-sized parking lot, that would be about $1 trillion. The Fed's balance sheet is five times that. These numbers are staggering. And that clip that we just played, which had Peter Schiff and Rickards, and it had a lot of guys who follow this stuff and know what they're talking about, is a very important clip. Okay, it's probably about an hour and a half to 2 hours worth of stuff that's spliced down to 14 minutes. In this Twitter speed, soundbite era that we live in, this is about as long as people can possibly digest information. Go back and listen to that clip. Download the MP3 of this show and share it. People need to hear this stuff. They might not listen to 2 hours of Peter Schiff pay attention to that, but a 14-minute clip they can probably digest, or even parts of that would be enough. So go back, go to blogtalkradio.com, search out Liberty's Thunder, look up this show, Buy America, and you know where that clip is. Okay, you know the timestamp. So get it, share it. People have to understand this. Moral decay and then financial malfeasance and hyperinflation, followed by the next step, which is when the whole thing falls apart, massive war. You think that we've had problems with Iraq and Afghanistan and being in 45 African countries and now Ukraine and possibly Syria. It's nothing compared to what will happen when you back an animal into a corner, and this animal is backing itself into a corner by printing unbelievable amounts of money. This is what is going on, and the only way you can stop it is for people to understand it, to become aware of it, to know the truth, and then to get busy working together. Instead of nitpicking and fighting about the stupidest little pet peeve issues like, well, we need to legalize hemp. Yeah, I agree we need to legalize hemp, but it's not a priority. This is a priority because this is imminent. This is very dangerous, and all that other stuff won't matter. So learn to get along and focus on this stuff and put a stop to it now. Not tomorrow, not next week, right now. It's already the 11th hour, and we've got to do this. You need a force multiplier. You need to get people aware of these things so they can do something about it and quit nitpicking your candidates. Oh, Rand Paul said this, Ted Cruz did that. Look, they all suck, but some suck less than others. Those are the ones we have to support, and if you don't like any of them, then you be the candidate. But someone has to do this because the power structure is in D.C. and we have to diffuse it. It's between D.C. and up the 95 corridor to New York, where the New York branch of the Federal Reserve is. That's how important this is, and you're the one that has to do something about it. Chris, you want to comment on that clip?
Sure. On the clip? Yeah, it was walk down memory lane because I listened to all five videos and timestamped them. So, I was into it big time. The only thing I didn't do was take notes as I went. That's how you really get stuff into your head, is when you listen and take notes. But I was going to make a point, and you're talking about, you know, listening to the 14 minutes. But each one of, you know, and you have it posted on the group or on the show page. I have it in Liberty's Talk under the financial thread. And I did not say that earlier. The most important thread on that whole group is a financial thread. The least interacted thread on that group, where people comment, like, involve, you know, counterpose, you know, bring their own article, is the financial thread in the group. And it's the most important thread, because if you do not have financial freedom, you will never have freedom. We are slaves to debt in this country, and it was a plan. And that's not conspiracy. That's a fact. If you study the central bank and how they were put together and what the founding fathers did and didn't do, and the battle between, you know, the players, one trying to get the central bank and bring, you know, England's system into America, and Jefferson saying no, and, you know, in that battle that went on, then they ended up with a bank, and then the people said, screw this, and they, you know, didn't renew the charter. Then they went for a while longer, and then they did another central bank, and then Andrew Jackson, you know, came in and wouldn't renew the charter, and talk about a mess that was, and then they tried to kill him, assassination attempt. And then, you know, we go through the Civil War and the debt involved in that, through the end of the 1890 was a very key era in this country. And then all the crap that was going on then, and the amount of debt that was holding over the country, and some of the, and the changes in the world in the late 1800s with socialism and communism and all that crap that was going on. And of course, all through all that crap, no matter what, there was the Rothschilds and their banking system. They had control of everything. There was actually an article that was written by a guy, and I don't remember his name off the top of my head. I was researching this yesterday. He wrote an article that said, the problem with empires is that they're really expensive in, you know, man and treasure and ships and everything else, and it's very difficult to keep them in, you know, keep control of them. So he proposed the concept of indebting the countries and the industry to a central bank system, and he published that. And the England got a hold of that and said, "Hey, this will make it easier to hold the, you know, control our empire." And they expanded that concept of, you know, national debt to a private party. A lot of people don't understand this because they hear Federal Reserve, and I'll never forget the first time you said this, but it is neither federal nor is there any reserves. They print this crap out of thin air. And then they sell that to the banking, you know, top echelon of banking systems, and they buy the U.S. debt, and then we pay them interest on money created out of thin air. That's how they indebt your nation. You know, we still owe money all the way back to Civil War. It's never been paid off. And they don't ever want you to pay it off. They want to control you. And if the bankers control you and the corporations get behind it and then it get all embedded in that, you know, that hell area of hell where you live, you know, you create this corporatist fascism system and the rest of us pay the price for it. If you're not on the inside, you're on the outside. And what do? You keep thinking, well, I'll vote for this guy. Well, he sounds kind of conservative. Oh, he sounds like he cares about, you know, balancing the budget. Screw balancing the budget. Nobody's going to balance the damn budget. The system's broken. And it goes all the way back to this banking system. Now, these guys, Rickard and Schiff and the rest of them that were on that clip, these are some brilliant mother bears. I mean, brilliant. And I follow them. You follow them. They understand the local, the micro, and the macro, and the international game. And Rickards is actually, you can listen to him for an hour and walk away, and if your head doesn't hurt, then you're not listening. Because he really gets it. And very brilliant. And all of them are. I don't want to take away from Schiff or the rest of them, but Rickards is way out there. His analytical powers are incredible. But if you don't understand this stuff and you think that you're helping fix the problem and you don't understand basic economics, you're not helping anything, because you're going to vote for some yahoo that all he did in his primary was insult Obama and talk about the bad economy. Well, if he was part of the Bush era, he's part of why we're where we're at. So why in the hell did you vote for him? Well, because he sounded conservative. No, that's called marketing, you know, propaganda. You know, you've got to get this stuff figured out, folks, because if you don't get it figured out, it's over as you know it. And in reality, and not to get too gloomy on people, it's going to crash, period, end of report. Everything that I look at, everybody that I follow, and these aren't some, you know, conspiracy theory guys. These are international investment guys, those guys on that clip. These are people who deal with big numbers all over the world. You know, Schiff has got a huge investment firm. You know, Rickard is beyond genius. All these guys, they're all on that financial thread on the group. Let's start learning this stuff. You know, you don't have to be a financial investment person to understand it. You got to get a basic, and, you know, read some of Ron Paul's books. He's been exposing this crap for 40 years, you know. And go back and, you know, yeah, read The Creature from Jekyll Island and understand how this came about, this law passed, you know, on a Christmas Eve while everybody was gone and a handful of people, just enough for a quorum, pushed this Federal Reserve, you know, charter into place. And we're 100 years into this, and we're in a mess. And like I said earlier, the problem that we have is that what's kept us alive, because like you say, most fiat currencies never last more than 40 years before they totally collapse and you have to rebuild a whole new economic currency system, okay? And you notice I didn't say money, because if it ain't backed by precious metals, it ain't money. If you can't walk down to the bank and turn in a note and say I want gold or silver, it ain't real money. You know, it's debt notes. It's currency. And our whole system's built on this, and it was never meant to be in the beginning with our founding fathers. And people fought forever for it not to happen, and the world central bankers have been fighting forever to make the USA part of it. Well, we've been part of it for 100 years. We're at the end of the run because China, Russia, BRICS nations, and dozens of other countries are moving away, including the EU, are moving away from the U.S. dollar. And I think it was Rickard. I was talking to you about this, trying to remember, and I never found the clip again. I'm sure I'll run into it sooner or later. But I think it was Rickard said, here's the difference. In 2008, this is so important to understand this. He said in 2008, because the U.S. was the stable, supposedly, stable economic system in the world because of the reserve currency and the petrodollar. And we have the largest economy and the largest output in terms of, you know, manufacturing, blah, blah, blah. He said everybody moved to the dollar. That's why the U.S. was able to prop itself up on a 0% growth, was that they were able to sell this debt. That's how we went from, you know, Bush's debt to Obama's debt, both of them records. And that's how the Fed was able to print $5 trillion and buy up all this debt and infuse it into the system and keep the economy running on fumes for 5-plus years. He said, but the only reason that happened was because everybody ran to the U.S. dollar. That means they were buying up the debt. The U.S. put $1 trillion on, or whatever, half a trillion dollars on the market in bonds, short notes, long notes, whatever, and you know, low yield, but they put them out there, countries to buy them up, including China, because they had a trade deficit, huge trade deficit with us, because we'd print funny money so we could buy their cheap shit so you could go to Walmart and shop. And we've been doing that for 20-plus years, and now they have like $4 trillion of ours, and they're trying to get rid of it as quick as possible, including buying up U.S. properties and businesses. Okay, so here's what happens. He said, and like I say, I think it was Rickard said, that the next crash or the next correction, if you want a softer word to make you feel better listening to our shows, is they're going to run away from the dollar this time because they're not going to let it happen again. And that's what's happening across the world right now with all these China-Russia deals, BRICS, including the EU, including this big deal that China cut with Germany, which is the whole economic foundation of the EU. It's the only stable country there. And it's the only stable country there because they have 6,200 corporations operating in Russia. You know, that evil communist Putin guy? Freaking idiots. You know, Russia's been building economic ties and trade and business all through Europe, you know, and now they're pivoting to Asia, you know, while we've been blowing up countries, spreading democracy. And he's the bad guy. That's why he's such a bad guy that Germans have 6,200 corporations functioning in Russia. Sounds kind of like free enterprise to me. God, I hate the lies that the U.S. media spreads and the government spreads. Learn, you know, get involved in that BRICS Fed. Learn some things. Quit being a tool for the bankers. Because if you're spreading the same old crap that the media spread and the government spreading and that Jen chick spreads out of the State Department, what a joke, you know, then you're just basically all you are is just a propagandist for the frickin' bankers that are destroying our economy. Learn something. So anyway, they're running away from the dollar already. And that's what's going to happen. When the correction comes, you're going to watch trillions of dollars move away. And who in the hell is going to prop up the USA? Tell me one country in the world that's going to cover our ass like we just did for the world in 2008. Where's it going
to
happen?
They're going to plunder us, not cover us. Yeah, they're going to plunder us. They're not going
to
cover us. But
China's already plundering us.
Yeah, we've got about 9 minutes live left. We'll probably do our final thoughts shortly. But if you want to listen to it live, you have to call in 646-649-1013. Listen on your handset. Your browser will cut you off at 11 p.m. Eastern. Remember, our regular broadcast time is 9 p.m. Eastern Sundays. It runs for about 2 hours live in your browser, but you can always listen on your handset. And anytime you want, the shows are available on our Blog Talk Radio page, blogtalkradio.com. Search out Liberty's Thunder. Play the show if you're in podcast or on the Internet in the browser. It just keeps playing. Go back and find 90 minutes into today's show, Buy America, that clip, and share it and listen to it and get people to understand it. The Weimar Germans were too busy playing sexual escapades and getting stoned and getting drunk and heroin and cocaine and old men buggering little boys and women were liberated, lesbians, to even worry about inflation, interest rates, devaluation. And then things went nuts. When a loaf of bread cost you $1 one day, $10 the next day, $100 a day after that, then $1,000, then $10,000, and then $1,000,000 by the end of the week, then you start paying attention. Guess what? Too friggin' late. And all this math and all these numbers and all these technical words like inflation and devaluation and interest rates and aggregate differentials and blah, 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 it sounds complicated. It's not that complicated. Get yourself familiar with it. Start off with Henry Hazlitt's Economics in One Lesson. Creature from Jekyll Island is a great book, but it's pretty big. You'll have a tough time getting through it. There are some inconsistencies, but it is a very good introduction. I would recommend Ron Paul's and the Fed. It's easier and more accessible. Or Murray Rothbard's Case Against the Fed. And you can find those free at Mises.org. That's M-I-S-E-S, the Mises Institute, named after Ludwig von Mises. Or go to Acton.org, look it up. But the important thing is get this information out there. Now, on our Facebook page, if you click on the pic that Chris made, Buy America, okay, Moral Decay, Hyperinflation, and War, in the comments section, all of these things are linked in there. Or join our militia, and they're in there, and they're also in Liberty's Talk. But get this information out there. Get people to understand it. Get them to know that this is what's happening right now. Moral decay first, hyperinflation next, and then one hell of an ugly war. The Germans were having sex parties one day, paying a billion Reichmarks for bread the next day, and then they were getting the shit bombed out of them by the RAF, and they were fighting the Russians on a terrible front, and then the whole thing collapsed. And frankly, Germany didn't recover in total until after the fall of communism when the Berlin Wall came down very recently. This is how bad things get. And if you think for a second, we're America, we're great, this can't happen here, we got better managers, they know how to handle it this time, you are deluded. The Republicans and the Democrats have caused this to happen. Remember that the Currency Act, the Federal Reserve Act, was foisted on us by Republicans. It was signed into law by a progressive Democrat, Woodrow Wilson, who later regretted it, but it was too late. And it's been championed by both Republican and Democrat administrations since then. It's the welfare warfare state. And since the neocons infiltrated the Republican Party, they have no problem with the welfare state. They love fiat money, and they like to use war to control the world. And that's what's going to happen in your name. And you're going to become impoverished because of it. And you're going to lose your liberty. And about half the people in this country are going to welcome this the way that half of the Germans welcomed the Nazis. If you don't educate them now, and you don't educate your delegates and representatives now
and you don't start getting in touch with what the constitutional republic is supposed to be, we will continue to live in this police state. It will continue to get worse. Your liberties will become more eroded. You will become more morally bankrupt, and the money will become worthless, and war will be inevitable. And I'm not talking about a war where sadly we lose 4,000 troops and kill a million fuzzy foreigners. I'm talking about the kind of war that makes its ugly head rear right on your doorstep, where you will know at least one person who was killed in it, and it will affect you directly. That's how important this is. But what are people doing? Stuffing their faces with Cheetos, cheering on their team. Oh, well, Mitch McConnell won. Well, he's better than the Democrat. No, he's not. Oh, well, John Cornyn got reelected. That's just, you know, all of this is crap. And none of these politicians, the good ones or the bad ones, can make a change alone. You like Rand Paul? That's great. Rand Paul's a good guy. He gets the Constitution. He understands that the Fed needs to be audited and rolled back. He knows that we need to have a strong military but not have intervention. That's all wonderful. If you're going to pin all your hopes on Rand Paul and do nothing about helping him until September of 2016, then you might as well give up now, because he can't do it alone, and you can't wait until then to help. The primaries are happening right now. We've already screwed up several of them because people are asleep and Republican voters are generally numbskulls who just vote for the jersey. That's where we are. Tired and I'm pissed off and I'm sick of living in Weimar America. You want to go to final thoughts or you got something else?
Sick of living in Weimar Republic. Hey, you know, the good thing is when it crashes again and the correction comes, you'll be able to go to Eastern Russia and work on the largest construction project in the world with Russia and China's program that they're doing over there. Anyway, I'm being sarcastic, but, you know, things are changing. It's funny because, you know, I've seen this coming for most of my life. Probably, you know, I'm older and I don't know that I'm more mature, but, you know, I've done more research in my life and really dug into economics and really dug into the militarism around the world. I don't think I really paid attention to that. I thought we were doing good, and I've learned something different through the years. But, you know, I've watched the moral decay of my country for a long time, and I think a lot of people have. But and my attitude is, you know, I'm kind of a simple guy. You know, I'm a caveman. They call me Trog, Luddite. But I don't give a shit what you do. But don't tell me I got to accept it, and don't tell me I got to like it, and don't shove it down our children in school. And there is a system that's being implemented in our country that is specifically designed to destroy the family unit. Because if you destroy the family unit and the state gets control of the children, just like Stalin said, give me one generation of children and I will control everything. I mean, that was an ad lib, but you know what I'm saying. If you want me to get perfect, I'll go look it up. But basically, we're crumbling. People are scared. They're freaked out. They're hiding. They're, you know, they're either working their butt off or they're not working. And they're doing what, unfortunately, most people have learned to do in this country, and that is they're escaping into Xbox, into American Idol, into sports, reality TV. You know, it's barbecue season. And that's all wonderful stuff, but if it occupies your life, and then you tell me you don't have time to learn some things or, you know, to involve yourself, then, you know, you're lying. You're hiding. And for many, many, many years in this country, because of our economic system and the new growth in technology and manufacturing and everything else, people did pretty good. Well, we're at the end of that rope. And it ain't going to fix itself. Obviously, in the last 5 years, you know, people have finally figured out that Obama had no intention of fixing the economy, no intention of cutting government. All he did was raise taxes and add another $1 trillion to the federal budget, which means that he's paying people not to work. And you can't do that forever. Socialism only works until you run out of other people's money. Well, we're out of money. And, you know, raise the taxes on the corporations. Well, you can't do that. They're gone. God, I wish people had learned some shit. Excuse my French. But, you know, 40% of the profits made for U.S. corporations made overseas. You think they're going to come back just so they can pay more taxes? Sorry, it's over, dog. You know, get over it. God, the liberals, you know, they just have this concept that, well, they got all the money. Yeah, they do have a lot of it. And they're going to have more of it because they're tied to the government and your buddy Obama, you know, who you thought was all about liberty and freedom and equality and, you know, a bunch of lies. You know, he's just as corporatist as Bush was or more. In fact, I'd say more. And, you know, but people don't want to learn. They just want to vote for their jersey and, you know, and rah, 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 my guy, my guy, my guy. And they spit out the same crap that you hear on MSLSD and, you know, Communist News Network and the rest of them. And then the Republicans, they all go listen to Fox and Rush, and they spit out their side, and neither one of them are talking the truth. Neither one of them are talking about the true economic situation in this country. I hear the little radio news blips about, oh, the stock market, it's a new high. Oh, my God, everything's doing better. No, we only have 6.5 unemployment. Well, that's because the government doesn't count all the people who quit looking for jobs, stupid. You know, the government lies. I don't know why people think that government is the moral adjuster in society. And I'm not saying corporations are either. Okay, but the marketplace has a lot of power because the power of where you spend your money is a vote. And with the government, we're so far beyond our ability or our vote even to change anything because of all these ABC departments out there, you know, Bureau of Land Management, TSA, Homeland Security, just, you know, whatever. Spit them out. There's a bunch of them. You know, they just write laws all day long. Take away your freedoms. Take away your rights. Neither side of the aisle is going to fix this. NDA just got passed again. Nobody even debated it. Nobody even talked. In fact, I think what were we focused on, a plane or invading Ukraine or who knows? You know, we're focused on some crap that had nothing to do with anything, and they passed the NDAA again, which means that if everything goes to hell and the government and these new militarized police want to round you up, there is no law to protect you. That's basically what's in it. Now, there's other things in the NDAA that are important. Unfortunately, we write 3,000-page laws now, and we intertwine all this crap in there so that nobody can understand it, which was something that was warned about by our founding fathers. Law should be simple, direct, short, you know, one page. But basically, the way they write these laws is to protect all their cronies, usually these big mega corporations and the unions and whatever, you know, whatever side, you know, you favor to. And they write these laws, and nobody can understand them, and it takes a team of lawyers, and it takes about 3 years to break it down, like with Obamacare. You know, it just took forever. And then they change it constantly, you know, because you create a new department who changes the laws at will. And many of them are unconstitutional, and many of them don't follow the standard of rule of law of this country, and there ain't a damn thing you can do about it because you keep voting the same bastards in over and over and over again. And there's two ways of voting somebody in. One is not being involved. So the people who are up and running and want their guy to win, their crony, you know, whether it's a rhino or a progressive, either side, doesn't matter. You know, they suppress the vote and they get their guy in because you didn't pay attention, you didn't get involved because you didn't think it mattered. And then the other side is the people who don't educate themselves, haven't figured out how to use Google except to, you know, research cats and things like that. And so they're not educated, and they go pull the lever for their team, and they put the same bastard right back in power. And it just keeps – it's a deadly cycle. I really honestly thought 2012 with, you know, the Romney debacle and what happened and how they treated Ron Paul and what happened at the convention and the amount of exposure it got that people would have woke up, and you and I launched almost immediately into the importance of 2014 – And we've done, I don't know, hundreds of shows, thousands of posts, tens of thousands of posts, and we're turn around, we're walking right back down the same alley that we just said we'd never do again. So I don't know. I don't know what to do about that. I can only do what I do. I can post, I can comment, and I can talk on the radio, and then I can go have a barbecue. People got to figure it out because I tell you what, when the loaf of bread is $70 million, It just blows me away when I was listening to that clip, you know, and you're looking around, you're going, nobody has a damn job. And when them checks stop coming from the government, because the government's broke and the dollar collapses, because there's a difference between a stock market collapse and a dollar collapse. And most of the guys that you and I listen to and follow talk about the dollar collapsing, not the stock market. Stock markets, you know, they go up and down and they over-speculate just like the housing market, just like every other bubble they create. You know, they're riding high and they're making all this money and, oh, my God, everything's good. That's because the Fed's printing it, giving it to everybody to play with, like Monopoly. And, you know, that always corrects. You know, you got bull and bear and, you know, and pigs and horses. But that was a joke, bull market, bear market. But anyway, so here we are, and I really believe, and I really hope that people don't have to experience what is inevitably coming. We get the right people in there, and they can start to turn this ship around. We did it in 95. We did it with Reagan. We did it with when Gingrich had control of the House. We made some adjustments. We made some corrections. We got some, you know, semi-balanced budgets. We cut back on the deficit and the debt, and, you know, and it can be done. Problem is, it never lasts because the left is really good at selling people free shit. You know, Romney, even though he was just a bore, you know, what he said in that meeting that went viral was true. You know, big chunk of people are just going to vote for the gimme. Gimme, gimme, gimme. You know, I got my housing and my health care and my daycare and my drugs and government, somebody else pays for it, give me more. And they're going to vote that way. And then there's a side of the people over there that are going to vote for freedom and independence and liberty and the right to, you know, make money and keep what you make. And then the in-between crowd, they're just flat confused. You know, because really I really believe that the extremes on each side, right or wrong, or if you agree with them or not, are the only ones that are confused. They know exactly what they want. But it's that big, mushy middle, you know, that's hurting, but they don't know who caused it. They don't know who's the solution. Those are the ones that vote stupidly, because the other ones vote exactly what they want. So here we are, another week gone by, and hopefully this opens some minds. I really hope that we're doing a good work, because otherwise what the hell are we doing, Rex? Back to you.
What the hell are we doing? Sometimes I really don't know because, you know, I feel like we do the same show every week with just a slightly different theme. But, you know, repetition works, I guess. But here's the thing that, you know, Trog and I are just talking ourselves. If you're not getting the show out there, and why should you get the show out there? Because this is not stuff that people think about. Now I'm not talking about the vast number of people who are, as Trog just said, voting for the free shit. They're going to keep doing that, and they're the ones that are willing to claw your skin off and gouge out your eyes to get that stuff when it becomes scarce. You are never going to convince them to help you do anything to prevent that from happening, because in their mind, as long as they've got their porn and their Cheetos and their free housing and their Obama phone and, you know, an electrode up their ass or whatever it is that they're into, they don't care. And they're never going to care. So don't waste your time on them. I'm talking about people who are grassroots, people who are politically active, people who are self-styled libertarians, people who call themselves conservatives, people that vote Republican. These are the people that you have to reach, because they're the ones that can actually help us fix the problem, because they, in core, believe the same things that we believe. And conservatives and libertarians have so much overlap, but all we do is focus on the differences. That's just stupid, because that's how the other side wins. You need to focus on the common, the things we agree on broadly. You need to make the case that we need to fix this and fix it now, because Weimar Germany is where we are now. It just doesn't look as bad yet, but it will. Very fast, very soon. Now, some people say, oh, the two-party system's fixed, we're going to go Libertarian Party. Well, that's wonderful, except that the Libertarian Party never has any success. The system is rigged. The Constitution Party is wonderful. They're not going to have any success. The system is rigged. You need to change it from the ground up. We've got an Article 5 convention.
you get involved in your state board of elections, start working on getting the ballot access rules changed, start getting more open competition in elections with independents and independent parties. But until you get that done at the national level, and all the power right now is at the national level, all the money is at the national level, you've got to get people in there who understand what is going on. Is it going to solve the problem? I don't know, but it might. It might. Now, if that's all you're doing is focusing on national candidates and getting them elected and doing nothing else, it ain't going to last. As Chris said, we did it in 1980, we did it in 84, we did it in 94. It didn't last. It'll never last. It's a corrupt system. This is not the system we're supposed to have, but it is the system that we have. You can whine and bitch all day long about incorporation in 1871. You can whine about the Federal Reserve. You can complain about the duopoly. You can complain about the corruption. It is what it is. Fix it. And you don't marry yourself to one strategy or one candidate. There's a zillion things. Start a committee of safety in your neighborhood. Get it recognized by your state legislature. Revitalize the Second Amendment, the militia of the United States, the militia of the several states, because that's how we enforce the laws. Start getting sheriffs who know the Constitution and are willing to arrest the corrupt politicians. These things will take time, but these are things you can do. Prepare for the collapse that's going to come one way or another. The only question is what comes after. A totalitarian tyranny the way it happened in Weimar Germany? Or will it be a commodity-backed U.S. Treasury dollar, a federal system where we have local autonomy, local sovereignty, the government sticks to its enumerated powers? It's up to you. But if you're going to wait until then to worry about it, it'll be too late. The momentum is against us. But most people, when they're presented with the ideas of the Constitution, properly interpreted as it was written, when they are presented with the ideas of authentic liberty, when they understand sound money, they like these things. But see, they're not taught to think in those terms, and they don't think in those terms. And when you use words that they've been conditioned to despise, like Tea Party, Liberty Movement, Ron Paul, they freak out. So you have to educate them. Republicans are not our enemy. Republican voters I'm talking about. The Republican candidates, most of them are our enemy. But Republican voters are not our enemy. Republican voters are the ones who tend to be conservative and libertarian-ish. Now, some hardcore libertarians are never going to get along with, you know, your typical uptight, you know, older Republican. Well, learn to get along. Quit despising each other. And those uptight white Republicans, you're going to have to learn to start talking to people with tattoos and earrings. Younger people, people who think differently, all right? That's the way. That's where we are. We have to learn to get along because guess what? Liberty is messy. We're not all supposed to be the same, but we are supposed to have a common culture of liberty, and liberty isn't freedom to do whatever it is the heck that you want to do. Liberty is you fulfilling your destiny as you discern it to become who you were made to be, but there are limits. And if we don't put those limits on ourselves, we will get a government that will put those limits on us. The difference is generally when governments do it, the limits they put on you are on your empowerment, and the freedoms that they give you are on your degradation. They will let you have all the perverted sex that you want. They'll let you eat all sorts of GMO fat crap that you want, load up on sugar. They will let you do all sorts of horrible things to yourselves and to each other. They won't let you own a gun. They won't let you own a piece of land without paying exorbitant taxes. They won't let you express yourself in public, especially if you have a kind of a religious bent that might possibly undermine the state. And that's where the problem is. The basic unit of civilization is the family. Look around. How is the family doing in America today? It's shit. If you wipe out the family, you wipe out the moral education of children. They are raised by government centers of conformity over and against their parents. Half of the women in America under the age of 40 have never been married. Half of them have gotten pregnant and killed their babies. 50 million Americans in the last 40 years have not been born. This is not how you build a future. This is how you destroy a future. You've got to get back in touch with your morality. I'm not talking about from a religious perspective at all. For all you Christians out there, when you pick up your Bible and start bashing people over the head with it and tell them that they're sinners and they're wrong, you're not winning any hearts and minds. You're pissing people off, and I happen to be a Christian, and it pisses me off when you do that. I'm talking about decency and morality that is written on the hearts of every man. It is not particularly religious. Now, if you're a Christian, you know for a fact that the only way to heaven is through Jesus Christ. But that doesn't mean that we can't get along down here morally. Now, ultimately, heaven is where you want to go. But if someone doesn't believe in that, that doesn't mean they can't be a part of our society, as long as we agree on the basic principles of moral decency. Because when we don't have that, we have decay and degradation. We undermine our family. We wipe out the middle class. You create a vacuum, the government will fill it, and it'll never be the government you want. And I don't care if you're liberal progressive or if you're a libertarian anarchist or if you're a regular conservative Republican, it'll never be the government you want because that's not the way it works out, ever. Learn to get along and fix it. You have to learn to get along with each other, and you have to work your asses off to make this happen. Now, keep in mind a couple of things. Vince Lombardi said, perfection is not attainable, but if we chase perfection, we can catch excellence. The quality of a person's life is in direct proportion to their commitment to excellence. That means excellence in your politics, excellence in your personal life, excellence in your finances, excellence in your morality. Are you ever going to get it perfect? No. But you better start trying. You better start getting people to understand things. Now, Theodore Roosevelt was a pretty impressive guy. I don't agree with most of his politics. I don't agree with what he did. But he is a pretty impressive guy. He's a very resolute man himself. He said, do what you can with what you have where you are. We are in a shitty place. You can whine and bitch about it. You can complain that it shouldn't have been like this. It should have been better. Or you can pretend it's not what it is. That doesn't change it. Work with what is in front of you and make it as good as you can. The way to get started is to quit talking and begin doing. That was Walt Disney. Americans have produced some of the greatest people in history, some of the greatest inventions, some of the greatest benefits to all of mankind. We have done some amazing things. Lately, we've been doing some horrid things because we've lost our way. And understand this, and this, it doesn't matter what your particular religion is or if you don't have a religion or what your political worldview is, here's a simple fact. When people give in to their passions, whatever they are, because most of us have some pretty twisted passions, you don't want to admit that, you're a good person, you're a moral upright, bullshit, okay? If you're a Christian, you know that everybody's a sinner. And if you just look around empirically, you see that people have some depraved desires. When you let those go unbridled, you become selfish, you don't care about other people, you're more interested in satisfying your appetite like an addict, whether it's an addiction to brownies or heroin or sex, I don't care. That becomes your overarching purpose, and then you lose control of the society. The bankers come in, and they start satisfying that depravity with free money, and then eventually the whole thing collapses. And you freak out because you can't afford $1 million for a piece of bread, and you need someone to save you. And you turn to the government, and they say, sure, we'll take care of you. You just become our little slave, and we'll feed you and clothe you and take your children away from you and tell you what to think and what to do and where to go. Is that the life any of us wants? Because that's where we're going. And when that doesn't work out, there's always war. This is played over and over and over again, not just Weimar Germany, but that is a pretty stark example and so similar to where we are right now. Get busy. We can fix this if we work together. Not tomorrow, not next week, maybe not next year, maybe not even in your lifetime. But if we don't start now, it'll never happen. Do you want to be the people that saw the end of America, or do you want to be the people who at least started the restoration? It's totally up to you. Learn to get along. Work hard. The primaries are happening right now. Get people who love this country, love liberty, understand the Constitution, elected, and let's start putting these corrupt pricks out to pasture. We'll be back next Sunday, and after this close, there's a pretty good clip. It's relatively long, but it's important information. Listen to it. In the meantime, don't let this negative information get you down, because the one thing Americans have been known for, and Christians have been known for throughout history, is making things better when they seem darkest. So do it. Do it because it's the right thing to do. Do it because it's beautiful. Do it because it is freedom, and we were made to be free. This is Rex and Trog signing off.
And the thunder of liberty rumbles on.
Its very name became synonymous with perversion, debauchery, and creativity. Berlin in the 1920s was the sex capital of Europe.
Falling in love again, never want her to. What a girl to do, can't help it.
It looked like a normal downtown area of Central Europe until 5 o'clock. And then everything would begin to change utterly. Places that you hadn't noticed would turn into outrageous strip clubs. The basements of the restaurants would be homosexual or lesbian romper rooms and sex clubs. Berlin was what sexual daydreams wanted to be. You could find almost anything there, and maybe everything.
Berlin was the modern town for women around the world. It was a city that was filled with lesbian life. There was the idea that everywhere you went, you didn't have to hide what you were. You celebrated your life. They called it their Shangri-La by the Spree.
Berlin was the place to take a walk on the wild side. The edge city in the 20s, more than any other place in the world. Unlike France, unlike the United States, Berlin lost. Germany lost in the First World War. With that loss came a revolution.
When there is great economic upheaval, there is great political change. It usually goes along with it. In the hyperinflation in Weimar Germany in 1923, this hyperinflation ended on November 15th, 1923. On November 8th, 1 week before the end of the hyperinflation, Hitler's stormtroopers pointed machine guns at the front door of the Bürgerbräu Keller, where there was a political meeting. This is a big beer hall, where there were about 3,000 people listening to political speeches. And on that night, he took the stage at gunpoint and to this literally captive audience gave a speech that would change the world. Nobody knew the name Hitler. Nobody knew who he was until he gave this speech to a newly impoverished middle class, people that were scared and looking for somebody to lead them. And here this charismatic guy takes the stage, gives them a scapegoat, and says, I know the way out of this. The next day, those people in that beer hall followed him to try and do a coup to take over the government, and it failed. He was imprisoned. He was tried for high treason. His trial went on for an entire month, and during that month he had the ear of the nation. He was covered in every newspaper all across Germany, and the judges were sympathetic to his beliefs. So they let him go on for hours on end with these speeches. And that's when he gained power. It was when the middle class was scared. The middle class defines a country with their vote. The country, as the middle class,
socialism is a system where the government directly owns and manages businesses. Corporatism is a system where businesses are nominally in private hands but are in fact controlled by the government. In a corporatist state, government officials often act in collusion with their favored business interests to design policies that give those interests a monopoly position to the detriment of both competitors and consumers. A careful examination of the policies pursued by the Obama administration and his allies in Congress shows that their understanding that though the current system may not be pure socialism, neither is it free market, since government controls the private sector through taxes, regulations, and subsidies, and has done so for decades. Using precise terms can prevent future statists from successfully blaming the inevitable failure of their programs on the remnants of the free market that are still allowed to exist. We must not allow the disastrous results of corporatism to be ascribed incorrectly to free market capitalism or used as a justification for more government expansion. Most importantly, we must learn what freedom really is and educate others on how infringements on our economic liberties causes
ideological subversion or active measures, активные мероприятия in the language of the KGB, or psychological warfare. What it basically means is to change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that despite of the abundance of information, no one is able to come to sensible conclusions in the interests of defending themselves, their families, their community, and their country. It's a great brainwashing process which goes very slow and is divided in four basic stages. The first one being demoralization. It takes from 15 to 20 years to demoralize a nation. Why that many years? Because this is the minimum number of years which requires to educate one generation of students in the country of your enemy, exposed to the ideology of the enemy. In other words, Marxism-Leninism ideology is being pumped into the soft heads of at least three generations of American students without being challenged or counterbalanced by the basic values of Americanism, American patriotism. The result you can see, most of the people who graduated in the 60s, dropouts or half-baked intellectuals, are now occupying the positions of power in the government, civil service, business, mass media, educational system. You are stuck with them. You cannot get rid of them. They are contaminated. They are programmed to think and react to certain stimuli in a certain pattern. You cannot change their mind, even if you expose them to authentic information, even if you prove that white is white and black is black, you still cannot change the basic perception and the logic of behavior. In other words, these people, the process of demoralization is complete and irreversible. To get rid society of these people, you need another 20 or 15 years to educate a new generation of patriotically minded and common sense people who would be acting in favor and in the interests of demoralization process in the United States is basically completed already. For the last 25 years, actually it's over-fulfilled because demoralization now reaches such areas where previously not even Comrade Andropov and all his experts would even dream of such a tremendous success. Most of it is done by Americans to Americans, thanks to lack of moral standards. As I mentioned before, exposure to true information does not matter anymore. A person who was demoralized is unable to assess true information. The facts tell nothing to him. Even if I shower him with information, with authentic proof, with documents, with pictures, even if I take him by force to the Soviet Union and show him concentration camp, he will refuse to believe it until he is going to receive a kick in his fat bottom. When a military boot crashes his, then he will understand, but not before that. That's the tragedy.
That if the House GOP refuses to raise the debt ceiling, a default crisis or gradual government shutdown will ensue, and the public will turn en masse against Barack Obama. Republican House that failed to raise the debt ceiling would somehow escape all the blame. Then Democrats would have no choice but to pass a balanced budget amendment and reform entitlements, and the Tea Party hobbits could return to Middle Earth having defeated Mordor.
Versus Democrat, sit down and negotiate. There's the third element here, as you know, and that is a significant number in the House of Representatives who believe that we should have no negotiations until there's an agreement to defund Obamacare, which is not going to happen until we have 67 Republican Senate votes that would override a presidential veto. But I still believe we fought as hard as we could up until Christmas Eve morning was the last vote we took on Obamacare. And then, of course, I campaigned across this country all through 2012, said, elect Mitt Romney and a majority in the House and Senate, and we'll defund, repair, replace, and repeal Obamacare. And now some of us are being accused of not being zealous enough or committed enough or being squishes.
You're suggesting
or whatever.
That your efforts to help Trey Grayson have not paid off. You expect Rand Paul to win?
No, I don't know who's going to win. I hope it will help. I think Trey Grayson would be a stronger candidate in November, but I expect Kentucky's going to be in a pretty Republican mood this fall, and I'm optimistic that whoever wins the primary will be the next senator from Kentucky.
What does it say, though, about the strength of the Tea Party movement, however large and vast that movement is? It certainly has been in evidence in the support for Rand Paul.
Yeah, I think so, and it's an important movement in the country, and I think it's going
to
really help us in November.
To crush the Tea Party. Mitch McConnell is vowing to crush the Tea Party everywhere. Let me give you a little more background on this. Of course, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell gave an interview to the New York Times in which he predicted that the GOP establishment, the GOP aristocracy, as it were, was going to destroy the conservative insurgent Tea Party groups that are attempting to unseat at least three incumbents. But what's fascinating is that McConnell did not limit, of course, his comments to those three races, of one of which is targeted at his seat. No. In addition, he decided that he was going to say, I quote, this is from the New York Times, published on Sunday, I think we are going to crush them everywhere. I think we're going to crush them everywhere, McConnell said. I think they are not going to have a single nominee.
I came here to cut the size of government. That's exactly what this bill does. And why conservatives wouldn't vote for this or criticize the bill is beyond any recognition I could come up with. Well, frankly, I think they're misleading their followers. I think they're pushing our members in places where they don't want to be. And frankly, I just think that they've lost all credibility.
It means, as far as the Tea Party and others are concerned, it's anybody to the left of Ted Cruz is a rhino, a Republican in name only, which, as I say, is an insult. But you know what? The real rhinos are the people in the Tea Party and on the hard right, because they have made it clear over and over again that their allegiance is not to the Republican Party, but to their
particular brand of conservatism. Senator from Arizona, urge this body to trust the Republicans. Let me be clear, I don't trust the Republicans. And I don't trust the Democrats. And I think a whole lot of Americans likewise don't trust the Republicans and the Democrats, because it is leadership
in
both parties.
Imagine a time when the White House is once again occupied by a friend of liberty. And you may think I'm talking about electing Republicans. I'm not. I'm talking about electing lovers of liberty.